Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the June 21st regular meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. We will start our meeting as usual with a moment of silence, please. Thank you, and if you'll all stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Here we go. Excellent. Okay. This is the time in the meeting set aside for Planning Commissioner announcements. Are there any announcements that anyone would like to make?
In the LA Times and the San Francisco Chronicle, they just publicized today that Diablo Canyon is scheduled to be closed by 2025, which is good news for a lot of people that are care about ocean health.
Probably a lot of construction jobs in the dismantling process. I just would like to mention that the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance will be holding an open space workshop this Thursday, I believe from 5:30 to 7 at the Community Center. So those of you who are interested in the general plan process or interested in open space and recreation, put that on your calendar. It should be worthwhile attending. Okay, so moving on then to our consent calendar. Our consent calendar consists of five items, the current and advanced planning processing list, and meetings of the March 15th, April 5th, April 19th, and May 3rd Planning Commission meetings. Are there any corrections or comments or discussion?
I do have one issue. Sure. Scott, on A2 in the minutes, I think it's important enough for it to be noted that in the discussion when we talked about that project on South Bay, and I brought up the issue with the NPDS permit and the discussion we had with the private road, I think that I would like to have that in writing, that the NPDS permit was not required for a private road. It's about 55 minutes into the meeting, and so if you could just make that a statement in there. But if you look at the discussion, it's about 55, 25 through 57. There was a discussion about NPDS permits and road.
Yeah, we'll make that happen.
Thank you.
Any objections to that change? Okay. Seeing none, do we have a motion then to approve the consent calendar?
I'll make a motion to approve items A1 through A5 on the consent calendar.
Second? Don't be shy.
Sorry, second.
So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor of approval of items A1 through A5, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. So moving on to public hearings, we have only one public hearing on the schedule tonight, and that is case number CP0-465 and UP0-411. Regarding telecommunications facilities at 590 Morro Avenue. And I believe that Whitney is going to give us a staff report on that.
Thank you, Chairman Taft. Good evening, commissioners and members of the public, applicant. This is a request for an approval of a coastal development permit and conditional use permit to modify and add to an existing unmanned telecommunication wireless facility that is located at the Twin Dolphin Comfort Inn Motel building on the southeast corner of Morrow Avenue and Marina Street. This is in the R2 PDS4 zone outside of the Coastal Commission appeal jurisdiction. The original facility was approved in 2006, and the purpose of this upgrade is to enhance AT&T's wireless network within Morrow Bay by increasing network capacity and throughput, generally to keep pace with customer demand for increased wireless multimedia. Some of the things that hopefully would result from this upgrade would be faster speeds, better cell clarity, better streaming, and increased capacity. So I think I'll just go through some of these slides just to orient you to the project. So here's just a view from the corner of Morrow and Marina. One of the areas that has antennas is around the elevator penthouse on the roof of the hotel. You can kind of see it there in that photo. This is an aerial view. 590 Morrow is roughly in the center of the screen. Generally, there are some residential uses surrounding. Across the street is also boatyard storage. It's kind of a mixed bag neighborhood at the edge of the downtown. And now my thingy is not working. Okay, thingy. There we go. Okay, this shows some of the existing equipment on top of the roof. Let's see if I can make my little pointer work. Toward the bottom of the screen, you can see this rectangle here. This is where there are existing antennas around the elevator penthouse. There's a cable tray that runs around to the other site, which is on the east wall, lower down. I'll have an elevation view of that in a minute. This is the equipment storage shed on the ground level, kind of located in the interior parking area. And this is a skylight, and right there, that little dark spot there, kind of in the center of the roof, is the access hatch. So more diagrammatic design, and let me just get to my notes here. Hey, what happened to my zoning? Okay. So at the elevator area, they're proposing to go from four existing antennas to six over here on this, what we're calling the slant roofed area, which will make sense in a minute in the elevation view, going from two existing antennas to three. So generally, still the cable tray, this is the skylight, and here's the little access hatch. So this shows the existing east wall, and behind this slant tiled roof is are actually the two existing antennas, and they are screened with a fiber-reinforced plastic kind of made to look like part of the stucco wall of the rest of the hotel wall. What this project is proposing to do to enable a little more room is to basically push out that wall so that it's just flush with the remaining wall and locate an additional antenna and some other equipment behind there. This is the existing roof-mounted equipment above the elevator shaft, which faces onto Morrow Street. The proposed change there pushes it toward the back a few feet, but keeps the width of this screen the same, which is about 13 feet right now. The newer screen wall would set approximately a foot further back, which would definitely allow some relief. It's kind of very, very close to the edge of the building the way it is now. So this is just an overall site plan. There's a copy of this in your staff report as well. You know, the building, the surrounding sidewalk. You can see there's about a 6-foot setback on this eastern sidewall. Here are the where the antennas are proposed to be, and some are now existing on the wall. And again, that around the elevator shaft, actually the penthouse of the elevator. So this is more of a close-up of the existing equipment. Looking down on the east wall, there are now the two antennas. Kind of look like squashed light bulbs there. And then this is the existing tiled portion of the roof lower down. And the proposed new equipment, adding a third antenna and some additional equipment and pushing that wall out flush with the existing wall further to the south. And here at the penthouse surrounding antennas, there are four, and proposed to be two additional ones. This was a previous plan. I just put this in as a matter of comparison. We kind of started out this way with all of the newer equipment on the roof. Planning staff felt that that might be a little much architecturally. This is in an S4 zone, which requires some additional architectural scrutiny. And so the applicant kind of worked with us to eliminate this extra bit to the facility above the elevator penthouse. It did kind of extend several feet further to the south, and rather than putting the antennas into the wall, an earlier proposal was to have a whole new facility, I guess I'll call it, on the roof on the east side of the building. This is looking from the east side of the building in the previous preview. From Main Street, there's briefly there would be a little block to the rock, although this would be like driving by there. You would have to look quickly to actually see that. With this report and for this project, there was an electromagnetic energy report prepared to analyze radio frequency waves and that effect on this property and surrounding areas. And as I switch through my notes here, I'll just briefly summarize it, and we have someone here with the applicant if you have further questions on this issue. But just to summarize, the conclusions of the report were that at the ground level, the general population exposure limit is between 0 and 40% of the maximum permissible exposure limit. Generally, the exposure is 0 to 5% of the permissible levels, except immediately beneath each sector of antennas, where it's up to 40% of the maximum permissible exposure level, which is, as you know, set by law per FCC guidelines. Levels of exposure are obviously substantially higher directly in front of the antennas, up to about 20 feet out. That would be at roof level and about 20 feet up in the air directly in front of the antennas proposed for the east wall. These areas are not accessible to the general public and are signed on the roof and also cordoned off. Staff was concerned some about exposure levels at the house adjacent to the east-facing wall of the motel. There is now a single-family house there, single-story also. The modeling report shows exposure there on the ground and on the roof level at less than maximum permissible exposure levels. The resolution includes a condition also that a post-construction radio frequency compliance report be prepared to confirm that actual levels of exposure are the same or less than those modeled by this report. That pretty much concludes my presentation. You have plans, you have the visual simulations for the project. Staff is recommending approval of this upgrade. AT&T does have two other sites here in town on Quintana and Radcliffe that have been approved for this same type of upgrade. I think that's it, and I will try and answer your questions.
Okay. Let's start the process by first asking if anyone has any ex parte communications to disclose.
No.
Seeing none. Are there any then questions for staff? Or,
Whitney, on the second page of the report, actually, the third page, on table two, site summary, says the maximum simulated EMF level on adjacent roof is 342.1% on the adjacent roof. If I remember, is that a single story house there, correct?
Let me just, are we talking about this this report here?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. I was looking at my staff report.
The AT&T Exhibit C.
Okay, so we're on page three?
Page three, table one, access information. This says maximum simulated EMF level on adjacent roof, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down.
At 342.
At 302, 342%. So that's a single story residence, isn't it?
That's correct.
And so what is the allowable height limit at that structure?
Just for a little backup, that structure now is approximately 12 to 13 feet at the most in height.
Right.
It's a single-family home in a C1 commercial district. It is therefore a non-conforming use. So I was thinking earlier, wow, what if somebody wanted to put a second floor on this house?
Yeah, exactly.
But they wouldn't be able to do that per zoning, actually. They wouldn't be able to add more than, I think, 10% of the habitable floor area to this use ever. And likely, it's kind of an interesting lot because it's a pretty big lot. It's about 10,000 square feet that goes up all the way to Main Street. As opposed to being a little single-family lot, and then there's an adjacent development at the corner of Main and Marina. I'm kind of guessing here, but I'm thinking if someone were to do some redevelopment of that lot, that single-family house would go away.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a residential use, as there are other places in town where it's very secondary to the commercial use above or behind, and so would be, you know, located accordingly. And secondly, in terms of building up there, because of the way these antennas are now configured and then proposed to be configured with just the extra antenna, that level of development would prompt AT&T to have to kind of reconfigure what they have going on, because that would very much block their signal.
Right. Well, yeah, that was my point. You know, it seemed like somebody could redevelop that property.
Sure, they could.
And could at least go to, I think, it's a 30-foot.
It would be 25 feet there, just because of the surrounding residential neighborhood. Otherwise, it would be 30.
Yeah. So somebody putting a second story on, would that be, they would be in this 342% radiation area on a second floor on that site? correct?
Not for very long, because AT&T would need to reconfigure their antennas so that they actually work there.
Okay, and so that would be a condition. Is that a planning condition in this proposal?
It's not at this point. It's just kind of a practical consideration of what would logically occur. We can talk about that later.
Okay, because I wouldn't want to impose a height restriction on the neighboring property because of the AT&T antennas.
I completely understand.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Sure.
I understand how AT&T would, practically speaking, need to reconfigure its antenna. But we really can't be certain that that doesn't represent a health hazard because of the 342% exposure at that second level. Am I understanding that correctly?
We would have to sort of dig a little bit deeper into this report when we go. Let me see which figures we're going to want to go to.
I was just referring to what we just talked about on page 3.
Yeah, and so I'm going to ask the preparer, a representative of the preparer of this report, to kind of go through figures, looks like 8 and 9 with you. You might look over those a little bit in the meantime, but that will hopefully add some clarity. Before I muck it up and explain it incorrectly.
This never occurred to me before, but I can appreciate the difficulty of that. But I can see a distinction between the AT&T's position of this serviceableness of the installation versus responsibility for a health consideration, and those are two very distinct issues that we should think about. Yeah.
Absolutely, and this report pretty much speaks to the latter, which we requested, and they need to demonstrate that they are complying.
Right.
Whitney, I know we've been through a number of these in the past, but I think this is the first one that I'm seeing that's placed the antenna on a zero lot line situation. Can you recall any other ones where we have something on a zero lot line with an adjacent landholder?
I cannot. The antenna, the building wall, even as it is pushed forward, is approximately 6 feet from the property line. Mm-hmm. And adjacent development at its closest point, which is more to the rear of the lot, is then another 10 feet or so from the property line.
Yeah, I was just trying to think. I couldn't recall one where we were this close with such a large plume, whatever you want to call the graphic that's in here, over an adjacent property owner. We typically see them over public rights of way. But I was just, that's just question. I couldn't come up with one myself either.
I'm sorry. I can't think of an example really.
And we don't have anything, because we don't have any codes on these things right now. We don't have any neighbor to neighbor restrictions. I mean, if you do something with your lot, you don't increase the flow of water on your adjacent landholder. If you have a light, we have protections for the way you're shielding, especially uphill neighbors from the light source. But we don't have anything about an adjacent property with these things right now.
We don't. We're thrown right back to FCC guidelines for general population exposure limits, be that on the sidewalk in front of the building or on the adjacent lot. Often they will do modeling out to about 30 feet if there is in fact a structure that's likely to be affected with anything more than what's permissible. I believe they're well under the 100% of what's admissible or permissible, really, on the adjacent lot, even based on their modeling. So you'll see that plume on one of the figures that is in pink, and that's just a kind of required what is more than 5%. So that could be a big number. That could be anywhere from 5% to 70%. And then usually they have a corresponding figure that kind of gives you the parameters. It's really fun to read these closely. That's all I can say.
Whitney, several months ago or whatever it was, about when we talked about a Verizon antenna, we talked about having in a discussion a inventory taken of the locations and the densities of all the cell towers that we have through the city. Has that been implemented, or is that in progress?
I don't have an exhibit like that for you here tonight, and I'll let Scott maybe follow up on that.
When we were looking at that that Verizon site, and that information was requested. Well, that was Verizon, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah, and we did get some initial information from Verizon for all their antenna locations in town. But not all antenna locations in town. There are some websites that show them, but they're not accurate. So
right.
That was the thing. We did some research, found that the information that we were gathering wasn't really worth the time we spent gathering it. And so that was about the last thing that I remember us doing in relation to that request.
Yeah, because we got into a pretty good discussion and had that information that was not accurate. So is that something that staff would have to be directed by city council to do? Or is that part of our general plan update that we're going to be working on?
That's a good question. It is part of what we'll be coming up with when we get to the zoning code portion of the general plan LCP update. We will be putting together wireless guidelines for the city zoning code. The way things seem to be working right now, they'll have, there's several things working their way through the legislature right now, so it seems like this is kind of a moving target right now with regard to where we're at from a legislative standpoint. But we're going to attempt to put something together as part of that process.
Thank you.
Okay, I just had a couple of questions. Just to clarify, this height extension or height exception, height variance, was originally granted for the elevator equipment. Is that correct, for housing the elevator equipment?
It was originally granted as part of the original telecommunication installation in 2006. This project does not would just follow through with that. So it's an existing allowance for additional height. Interestingly, I did go back. I think this was built in 84 or something. So I went back through our laser fish and looked at architectural plans that were submitted with the hotel way before we had cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't show any roof mechanical. And it was kind of tisking because really, it looked very nice without roof mechanical. but of course, when they went to build and install their elevator, which was shown as part of the plans, they had to put some equipment up on the roof. And so then when the cell site came in for their application, it was kind of a logical sort of co-location area, and one thing led to another. So that was kind of a roundabout answer, maybe. Huh.
So prior to the initial antenna installation, this height extension was basically not unpermitted, correct?
It was just there.
There was no permit for it. There was no exception. There was no variance. There was nothing to allow the height to be 31 feet whatever rather than 25?
I was not able to find a planning permit that addressed that, no. They were obviously given a building permit, and I didn't see discussion of roof mechanical.
Okay, interesting. And then the other question I guess I had was I noticed that the equipment shed occupies what could probably be two parking spaces. Is there adequate on-site parking currently for the motel or hotel?
Yes, there's more than adequate on-site parking for the motel.
Primarily underground, then, garage.
It is. It's if you go in there, it's pretty amazing just how many spaces are kind of tucked away on that ground level.
Okay. Any other questions for staff? No. Okay. So then, we're going to open the meeting for public comment, and typically we invite the applicant or applicant's representative to speak first. So if you'd like to address the commission, please step forward and give us your name for the record.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. I'm Alexander Liu of Core Development Services. I'm representing AT&T. Thanks very much for this opportunity. I'm joined here with Kayron. He's also from Telnet. Telnet's the company that prepared the report. Just want to say thanks for the opportunity to kind of complete out the LTE 4G network in Morro Bay. AT&T has been working on this around San Luis Obispo County, working on a number of upgrades, just kind of keeping pace with customer demand. So this represents kind of the last site that is here in Morro Bay that they need to bring, you know, LTE 4G technology here. Wanted to speak on to Commissioner Luer's comment or question rather about the maximum simulation level of 342%. That level of exposure is only at the level of the antennas directly in front of the antennas. So to speak, your nose would have to be touching the antenna to be exposed at 342%. As you get further back away from the antenna, then the emission levels decrease. And so the table on page 3 shows just the maximum levels. However, if you switch over, if you turn to page 13, and I'm looking at figure 8, this figure shows on a scale from 0 to greater than 5,000% of what the FCC sets as maximum, what the levels would be modeled at the adjacent roof level on that adjacent house. You could see some very small, I'll use the plumes, that are colored blue in front of antennas 1, 2, and 3. And only in those areas, and it's not necessarily in wherever you are in that blue area, but only in front of the antennas within that blue area would you be experiencing exposure levels of 342%. Outside of the blue area, then the scale drops down between 0 and 100% of what the FCC's maximum level is. Okay. So as you can see, at the adjacent roof level, from this sector of antennas, everything on the adjacent property is coded green, so it falls within the 100%. Now, if we switch to, if we turn the page to page 14 to figure 9, the scale now is 0 to 5% and then greater than 5%. So there's a little bit of overlap between the two figures, the previous figure and this figure. The plume that looks like a brown purplish color, that shows the area that's greater than 5%. And everything that's colored green is between 0 and 5%. So the area that's greater than 5% is, while the scale does say it's greater than 5%, if we switch back to the previous figure 8, it would only go, it's greater than 5%, but equal to or less than 100. Are you, yeah. You follow?
I ask a question?
Why don't we let him finish, okay. And then we'll do questions.
So, thanks, sorry. So what this report is indicating is that with this proposed upgrade to the facility, even with the upgrade, on the adjacent property, it would still be compliant it would still fall within FCC guidelines. And so that's kind of our litmus test when it comes to these types of things, when it comes to exposures. Now, whether or not that would preclude a neighboring property owner to build up, you know, and you know, fully realize their development rights as being in a C2 zone, it still falls within 100%. So it's still even, I mean, realistically speaking, if they do build to a two-story height, yes, that sector of antennas will be blocked, and AT&T would likely have to come back, because the building, any future building that blocks the antennas in the line of sight, method of speaking, that sector of antennas just wouldn't work. So AT&T would come back, propose a different design, or propose a different location altogether, since the original design proposed for a rooftop little cupola for this sector of antennas, and that didn't go over very well. So we would likely have to find a different location for this, if that ever indeed happened, that being the development of the adjacent lot. So. That being said, if you have any other questions, that's what I'm here for. Just you know, wanted to reiterate what staff had said. The original design that was proposed to the city was from a different vendor. It was a little more impactful. So with this redesign, we think that it's a good compromise between, you know, the aesthetic concerns and AT&T's needs. We are working within generally the existing confines of the project as it exists. Along Morrow Avenue, we're not increasing the width of the screening that's there. We are, in fact, pushing it back away from Morrow Avenue, and then we are extending it just slightly back towards the interior of the building, and then where the slanted roof is. And that's the previous plan. But yeah, so we're just bringing it out. We're not extending it past any existing walls, so it's just going to be flush with the existing building wall. So. And that's the only element on that side of the building. So from an architectural standpoint, we're not really taking away anything that's repeated that would be, you know, really noticeable after the fact. So with that, I humbly ask for Planning Commission approval of this project. And I'm here if you have any other further questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, is there anyone else who would like to comment on this project? Okay, very good. Then we will bring it back to the commission for a few moments for questions for the applicant or more questions for staff.
Okay. Yeah, I have a question on that. Do you have an approximation of the percent, where it's from 0 to 100 there by your graphs? So at the setback line of the adjacent property, do you have an approximation of what that exposure level would be?
I'll have to defer that to Karen. Do we have that? He's asking at the property line, what would be the approximate exposure level, you know, between 0 and 100%?
Oh, and right after that, do you see it's below 100?
But
so that one is like.
Come on. So what he's asking is
this one, how much is coming out?
Yeah, so like, you know, if you were at this property line here.
Yeah, it is coming like,
you know, within below, I know it would be within,
yeah,
100.
That blue is coming out, it's like 4 feet, 5 feet coming out, and then after that it's below 100, it shows green, and there's no hotspot there.
Okay, it shows from zero to from greater than 5% on page 14.
Greater than 5%?
It says greater than 5%, and on that lovely color purple plume.
Yes, that, so that one, the greater than 5% up to 100,
right.
It's not hotspot at all. So, but it shows for, we only use that for sites that are co-located, other antennas are shooting the same direction if we have something there. So
okay,
this site is not co-located and there's nothing shooting there, it's all fine there.
Okay, but say at the approximately, you know, at the property line, which I'm assuming is the 10 feet or the setback, 6 feet. So what would be that value at 6 feet?
What percentage? What percentage at the...
For here?
Yeah.
Like 6 feet, I think it's less than 100. I don't know exactly, but it shows almost there is less than 100.
Okay, well, 0 to 100 seems like a pretty wide range there.
Yeah, 0, like below 100 is like a green. For FCC, it's and there's no hotspot there.
Okay, well, thank you.
Sure.
Other questions?
Mr. Liu, do these work sideways? It looks like they're about 4 feet tall, approximately. Do they work if they're rotated 90 degrees and they're running laterally?
In the 7 years that I've been working in wireless, I haven't seen an installation as such. The way the antennas are oriented, I know they do have a beam width of about 65 degrees going out. So, you know, if you draw 65 degrees from center out. But no, I haven't seen them mounted sideways before.
Do you have any installations you're aware of in the region that take the above 5% limit on an adjacent property as opposed to over a public right-of-way or something like that?
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand the question.
I guess it goes back to the same issue we've been talking about, that the property rights of the person next door potentially to not expect greater than 5% onto their buildable area. I mean, that's something. So I was wondering, how many cases are you aware of where you actually have the above 5% into the buildable area of the adjacent lot?
Well, in highly urban areas, there are instances where it still falls within the 100%, you know, permissible by FCC, and it falls onto, you know, an adjacent property, in some cases onto an adjacent property or adjacent building. But the key test is to demonstrate whether or not it exceeds the 100% that's allowable by FCC. In the 200 jurisdictions that I've worked in, I have not come across one that has any provisions in their zoning code that regulates emissions or limits emissions in such a way as like light pollution or noise or odors or anything like that. From what I understand, you know, the federal government has kind of taken that legislative ability away from local jurisdictions. We could debate about that, whether that's right or wrong. I mean, I'm all for local control and everything, but that's kind of the hand that local jurisdictions have been kind of dealt with in this arena. So.
Do you have a particular reason why the vertical installation, let's put the aesthetic one aside for a moment, do you have coverage if that antenna array on the east is pushed back 20 to 30 feet on the roof?
So if you push the antenna back away from the edge of the roof, what you end up with is it's a phenomenon called that in the industry we call it shadowing. The way the antennas work in many ways are, it's kind of like a flashlight. So it works on a line of sight principle. So if you can't see the flashlight, you won't be able to get coverage. So if you push, if you put a flashlight on the edge of a table, right? And if you pull it further and further and further back from the edge of the table, then you might be able to see it far, far away. But as you get closer to that edge of the table, you won't be able to see it. So when I say edge of the table, I mean like if you're at eye height, like if it's placed at eye level, or slightly above, like in this case. So if you're walking around, let's say, and you're trying to use your mobile device, and if you have that push back towards the center of the building, say where the skylight is, then as you get closer to the building edge, or you know, as you approach the building, your signal and quality will drop off significantly because you no longer have that line of sight. So in instances where we are asked to push the antennas back, we have to raise it up, higher up. So depending on the design engineer and the network and the antennas that you're using, I've seen a rule of thumb of for every foot that you move back away from the edge of the roof, 4 feet, you have to go up 4 feet. So if we were to go back 20 feet, we'd have some ridiculous looking monstrosity on top of that building.
Well, the other possibility is that then this plume, which is located outside of the building, would be partially inside of the building, which might be a concern also. You see what I'm saying? In other words, that radiation is going to be going into the building rather than off the side of the building.
I think I know the answer, but the request for this particular application and the modifications you're doing, I imagine they're not made within a vacuum. By that I mean you're probably looking at the sort of the totality of coverage in Morro Bay, and then you're deciding what you have to tinker with here and there to increase your data flow, I guess. And certainly that involves height and the permissible limits of micro radiation, I guess. But it also involves the specific locations and the number of locations. It's not really relevant here because we're dealing with just one precise application. You're not asking for additional. But in general, would it be fair to say that you sort of plan for a whole region and then decide on the basis of that where to stick them and how high they should be and how many you should have and what the strength of those antennas should be? Is that a fair assumption?
Yes and no. So at this stage, let me back up. So if there were no towers in the region, and this was, you know, totally virgin wireless area where no coverage existed at all, you know, not even basic voice coverage, then yes, the planning process would be, you know, where's our customer base, you know, where are the dense pockets needed, and then that would kind of dictate where we would like to have facilities located. But in this case, and in this stage of the game, where AT&T is upgrading their facilities, you'll see that the upgrades occur where AT&T already has facilities. Mm-hmm. So AT&T in Morro Bay has a total of 3 facilities, if I'm not mistaken, right? This is one. The other two already have the LTE upgrades, you know, on air and operating right now. So, in a sense, yes, we are looking to fill a coverage gap because this area of town doesn't have LTE coverage, so we're trying to fill that. The LTE upgrade, you know, enables AT&T to have more capacity. But in terms of picking the sites, AT&T is kind of dealt the hand that they have pre-planned. So rather than saying that, oh, you know, we're going to put up a new cell tower or put up antennas on a new building just for the LTE side of things. It's not cost effective for them. And, from a planning standpoint, it just doesn't make good sense. It's a lot of infrastructure to be adding for what's essentially just an upgrade. It's,
Okay, a couple more questions. I'm sorry.
Sure.
What is the angular emission on the vertical plane of the antenna? So what's the angle that it projects downward?
I don't have that information at hand right now. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It really depends whether or not the antennas are projected to be down tilted or not mechanically. I know that the antennas themselves have a beam width going vertical, but off the top of my head, I don't have that information at hand, and I don't have that information in memory right now. I'm sorry.
Are they typically run so that the beam, the lower edge of that angle would be pretty much on the horizontal, or would it be minus 10, minus 15? I'm wondering.
It's slightly below horizontal.
Okay.
So, I mean, if it goes straight out, but it also goes down a little bit. There is a little bit of declination, but it's not, you know, like full 90 degree, you know, going straight down immediately below.
Okay. Go ahead. And then on the, for an architectural question, these FRP panels, how close do they simulate the stucco texture and the color of the existing building?
So the good thing about the FRP material is it's fiber reinforced plastic, and then it takes whatever finish you'd like to put on it. If you want to do a smooth stucco coat, you could do a smooth stucco coat.
Okay.
You could match the existing. You could apply the same finish that's there. It could be painted. It could be, you know, the texture, the color could be added to the stucco itself, so it doesn't have to be painted.
Are you going to use construction joints, cold joints, or scored joints, or where the existing roof line and building line is to make that transition, or are you going to feather it in, or how is that going to be handled?
On the east?
This facade here.
The intent is to, or the current plan is to introduce a joint. I'm not a construction tradesman, mm-hmm. so I'm not entirely familiar with the terms that you've used, cold joint. But I do know that there is planned to be an expansion joint there that's going to match the location that's existing on the existing wall, so that it looks pretty seamless.
Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
This project is to upgrade to like 4G or whatever. Could you explain to me the density of the radiation difference between the 4G or what you're upgrading, how that affects as compared to the baseline that you have right now?
That is a very good question, and I don't have the answer to that. I'm sorry.
So that's an interesting question, and one that Whitney and I were just talking about. We have the report from when the project was previously approved that was done. So one question that would be interesting is, that report was done in 2006. Have the FCC exposure limitations changed since then?
No, not to my knowledge.
So the results of the report that was done previously has indications, let's see, what does it say? It says, for a person anywhere at the ground level, the maximum ambient RF exposure level due to the proposed, at that time, singular operation is calculated to be 0.26% of the applicable public limit. And then the maximum at the second floor elevation of the nearby building was at 1.1% of public exposure limit, according to this report. I mean, so that was back then when this was approved. So the new antennas, well, we don't actually know what the numbers are. It's just the range, right?
It's just the range, yeah. Yeah, unfortunately.
So that might be something you would be more interested in, maybe. What specifically is it you know, in and adjacent to the existing structure, right? Seems to be the concern. You keep sort of walking around that. So.
Oh, you're looking at the follow-up report, right? The actual...
We're looking at the... Yeah, wasn't it a follow-up for the other one? It wasn't necessarily a practice that the city, you know, pursued back then. Obviously, it's become more of an issue in recent times, and so now we regularly get them. I mean, for every project since I've gotten here, anyway, and for even prior to that, for several years. I had Wendy pull the report and was looking at the findings of it, and it seems like it potentially could increase in, you know, with the new antennas, it increases quite a bit, but it's not, you can't tell because it just gives you the range. It's 0 to 100. It could be 6 or 5%. I mean, or I guess over 5, 6 or 7 as it gets to the house. It's just, they don't give you what that number is. And so maybe that would be something that's actually more helpful. It's nice to see the grass, but if you're just given the range, then you don't really know. So.
But the 0.1%, 0.1-something percent, 0.1, I mean, like a tenth of a percent, compared to, does that compare to what we're seeing here in Table 2, the maximum simulated EMF level on the ground, which is now 39%?
Correct. Yes.
That's why I asked if,
yeah,
if it had, you know, if the way they measured this had changed since 2006, because it was a pretty good jump from what was originally shown here, although again well below the threshold potentially.
Now I will also like to point out that the report preparers are different.
Correct.
The models, and I don't know, Kayron, does Telnet use the same models that Hammett and Edison uses? Yeah, that kind of predates us working on the project. But anyway, so we have a couple of things. The models may be different, and the inputs at the time may have been different. I don't know if AT&T has the maximum, because the models illustrate a maximum kind of, I don't like the word, but worst case scenario of like maximum power, maximum usage. So I don't know if those parameters are the same. I haven't seen that report, so I'm not familiar with it. But what is modeled in the Telnet report reflects, you know, all the antennas operating at maximum. So there are some differences. There may have been differences in methodology, in how the models were ran and calculated. However, the important point to take home with this is that it's the FCC sets the guidelines of, you know, are you falling within 100% or below? And that's at the end of the day, that's what really matters. Because if AT&T is found to be non-compliant, being 100.1 or above, then, you know, that would be grounds to not have this project move forward. But as long as it's being demonstrated that this project is falling within 100% or below, then, you know, that's it. It's being demonstrated that we are complying with FCC guidelines. And on the topic of electromagnetic emissions, you know, that is not a topic that the Planning Commission should be using if you guys are, you know, walking towards a certain direction. I would highly recommend that not be the case.
Well, let me ask you one question just that kind of directly relates to that. And I understand. I mean, I get it. I understand that sort of the federal government has occupied this space. I'm a pilot. The same thing is true with airspace. Okay. Mm-hmm. The question though is, who reviews this report? Who determines? Who makes the determination that this report that we have in our hands demonstrates compliance with FCC standards? Does the FCC evaluate the report? I'm sorry.
Make sure we get that on.
FCC has already gave the permission to Telnet to evaluate this.
So you're licensed by the FCC?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just, because when I look at this report, when I look at Appendix A, okay, Appendix A has specific exposure limits, but not a general limit like you're showing us in the diagrams, but they have limits for each frequency band. And I don't see any data on what the exposure is in each of those frequency bands. So then the question I'm asking is, how do you then determine without that information whether you're meeting these standards?
So what we do, we use the roof view, which is like the total of all of them in one surface, which is like roof level or anything, all of the frequency with all of the powers together combined, it shows the result.
But I don't see any FCC limits for that, for all of the frequencies combined in Appendix A.
Yeah, one by one, they're going to be add up together and then show the result for each of these.
So you would determine...
It's just for one. And for like one antenna, one frequency coming out. And then if we add, so one antenna can have like multiple frequencies.
Of course.
And then five antennas working together in the same spot. Like this one at one sector, we have three antennas with some more than... with like five frequencies. So in this case, it's going to add them up together, all together.
Add what up? What quantity?
The powers that coming at the emissions coming out and gets the result together for that surface.
The power densities?
Yeah.
So then let's say, as an example, okay, let's say that we had an antenna that had no emissions in the 0.3 to 3 megahertz range, had 500% of the allowable intensity in the 3 to 30 megahertz range. So in other words, way over the safe limit established by the FCC in that range, and then very low emissions in the other ranges, the total would still come out looking compliant. Because you have, if you're just adding them all together rather than looking at each band individually, how do you know that you're not beyond the compliance limits in one of those bands?
We don't do that band by band. What we can do if we just want for one band, we can just turn off all other bands and then just simulate one band and see that. But it's going to give us the lower number as MPE percentage.
So are you telling me then that you actually calculate the power density for each band?
Yes, and then add them together.
But you don't present the individual bands in your report for some reason.
No.
So then how does this then give evidence that you're compliant if you don't present each one of this each because we've got five standards for we've got five standards for occupational, we've got five standards for uncontrolled, okay?
Yeah.
But we don't have any data on any of those bands.
I know. So if it's check figure 10, it shows all the data that you need. Each band, each antenna, everything, like figure 10, and then also table...
What? Figure 10?
Table 3.
I'm sorry, figure 10?
Figure 10 and table 3.
Figure 10 is on page 15.
Yep. So it gives you the frequency, antenna model, and input powers, everything, location of the antenna, and then the height from the ground, from that level that we're simulating. And then it gives you bandwidth gains, everything about that antenna. So it has the data from all antennas one by one.
Right, but I don't see power density anywhere. You're saying power density is the standard, but I don't see a figure for power density. Could you tell me what column that is?
The input power we use that we get from AT&T. This is the input power, the power that each antenna like shoots out. And then the power density that you need, like the MPE levels, like for spot, every spot by itself. In this whole 173 feet by 125 feet location.
Okay, I guess I'm... I guess you're losing me a little bit. I just, and I hate to belabor this, but in Appendix A, we've got 7.1 and 7.2. But I can't find anything in this report that says, okay, for 0.3 to 3.0, the maximum allowable power density is 100. Whatever S stands for, and the output of these antennas will be a number that's less than 100.
I know. So what we do based on this power density we get for like each location, each spot of the surface, right? And then show it as the FCC percentage. If you see appendix 7.5. Page 20, you can see that the calculation, how we use that and get this calculation and get the power density for each spot, and then after that finding the MP percent, which is roof view, which is already accepted by the FCC, the software that we use, and it gives the MP percentage of each spot. And gives the maximum MP on each surface, which is the MP percentage that we write under each figure in red.
So, in other words, I think what you're saying is that the formula that's presented in 7.5 is used to calculate the exposure level from the data that's presented in. Figure 10, mm-hmm. But man, you want us to go through and do all those calculations? Isn't that what you're supposed to do? Yeah. We'd like to see that data presented to us rather than simply say, here's the raw data and here's the formula for calculating it.
Yeah, I know. So this is what we have. Like, this is the formula we use, and then we use the software that does all of these. So, and gives us that result that you see.
Okay.
Engineering, right?
Go ahead.
Along the same vein.
Yeah, the same kind of thing. Do these frequencies and these power densities, like if you have another antenna, those forces don't couple each other, they amplify each other, don't they?
They may amplify each other based on all these variations that we have, like based on the beam width, based on the gain, based on the input powers. Maybe the beam width is too small, and then they're just next to each other, but they're shooting different way. They don't add up together. But if they're right on top of each other, yes, they will add up.
They would amplify.
That's what we give you the final one that you can see in the pictures. It means that if they add up together, what will happen? Maybe each of them one by one it doesn't even have anything coming out. If maybe it shows below 100, each of them by itself. But if they add them together, it gives you like 342% MP. So this is the worst case scenario anyway.
That's just with your antennas, but if you have another antenna of somebody else's there, you guys don't look at that, right?
We would. If there were other carriers at this location, then the report would take those other antennas into account.
Okay, but there's nothing preventing somebody else to hang some stuff on these locations if the owner or whoever agrees to it, correct?
Oh, no, there is. It would have to come back before Planning Commission. They'd have to submit an application into city planning. It would go through review. They'd prepare another report like this that would take into account AT&T's existing antennas and then their proposed additional, you know, co-located antennas there. If the levels exceed 100%, then, you know, that's they have to find a different location. So there is the check and balance that's built into the system there. I mean, they can't just, because AT&T's here, Verizon can't just come up on the roof and say, hey, we're going to go put up some antennas tomorrow, too. They still need an application. They still need to pull a building permit. They still need to get Planning Commission approval and everything. So, I mean, if Verizon, say, hypothetically came in and said, we want to do a co-location here and submitted an application that did not have an EME report, I'm pretty sure staff would go back and draft an incompleteness letter saying, you need, you know, this is one of the submittal requirements, you need to prepare one, and you better make sure that it's, you know, cumulative showing AT&T. Or, I mean, even if they did do it just theirs, I mean, it's not an industry practice to only do theirs. The only time that would be the case if there's no other antennas from any other carriers at the location.
Let me follow up on that a little bit, because one of, and I'm just going to ask your professional opinion on this, okay? Because one of the things that the community and the city council have expressed an interest in is actually trying to limit the number of architectural extensions that pop up all over town for the purpose of housing cellular antennas. Is this a site that would have in your opinion, that would have the potential for co-location with other carriers if that were, from a technical point of view, could that be accommodated, do you think?
From a pure, just, okay, looking at this location in complete isolation, ignoring where Verizon may or may not be located, you know, already in town, a building rooftop, and this is just a very general statement, a building rooftop can be co-located upon, you know, from a technical standpoint, as long as it meets, you know, as long as it's structurally viable, meets wind loading capabilities, and gets staff support and is approved through Planning Commission. That being said, if I'm not mistaken, there is a Verizon facility a little more than a quarter mile away from here to the northeast. I know it's toward the east. I kind of fuzzy if it's northeast or southeast, but it's towards the east, right? It's highly unlikely that Verizon would come to this location seeking co-location.
No, I'm just asking in terms of feasibility, in terms of basically geometry and also, in your opinion, again, and I realize this is off the cuff, but would it be possible to co-locate another carrier here and still be within the FCC limits in terms of EMF?
Theoretically, yes. Theoretically, yes.
To kind of piggyback onto his power density question, is there a capability of these waves to resonate and get a higher power density in certain areas because of resonance between the frequencies? Or do you shift the phases of the emissions?
The thing that I know,
I believe the model already takes that into account,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. It takes everything into account.
So that's taken up in the computer model?
It's already a worst-case scenario. It's going to be...
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
It's already the worst-case scenario.
Okay.
So it does include all of these.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Sure.
But just so I understand, and I do understand how the federal government has preempted the notions of the safety in terms of the emissions, but and after construction test, whatever you call that, now that should resolve any issues that we might have as to whether total emissions, individual emissions, are still within that 100% range. Is that fair? We're not talking about a totality. Every kind of emission coming out of the devices must be below 100%. Is that? And we would be able to detect that, confirm that, if you will, in a kind of after construction exam. Is that pretty much?
I think that would be a fair statement to make. Yes.
Okay.
Can I ask you to show up there when your documents show slanted roof one level? What level is that on that image up there? Where exactly are we talking? I want it, that last one was pretty sweet. There we go.
So the antennas currently are located at this level, and the antennas will remain at this level. So when the exhibit calls out slanted roof level, this is the slanted roof. And so the antennas are at this level.
But where's the height? Which point up there was the document showing the when we see this plume coming out?
It shows the worst case scenario, which is the highest part of
the highest part of the slope.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we already imagine it's not slanted,
right?
But the highest part is the level.
So basically, the second floor level, roughly, of that building, or it might be the third floor. The floor level of the upper story of that building is approximately at the top of that sloped area. So when you show something in plan here with the, I'm specifically looking at figure 6, where you exceed the 100% limit, that's at the top of that roof level at that point. That's where that's showing that. Yeah. That's what I'm understanding, right?
For adjacent roof level, we indicated like 2.5 feet below the antenna, which is, I think, it's still a lot more than second floor.
I'm sorry, could you use the microphone? We're still having.
So there's where the slope starts, and you're saying it was taken above there, so it's actually up higher?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like bottom of the antenna. We indicated that like bottom of the antenna is 2.5 feet above that highest point of that slanted roof.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
About 20 feet up.
Sure. Okay. Just as a general physics question on this, the frequency range and bands that these towers emit. Is that in what's considered an ionizing range for the human body?
This range is non-ionizing, so it's below the microwave spectrum.
Okay.
That's key, because as you may or may not know, ionizing radiation, or the ionizing spectrum of the EM spectrum, is like the X-ray microwave. That has the potential to disrupt at a cellular level DNA, that's been proven, but non-ionizing radiation has not.
Okay, so. Great. Thank you.
Well, according to who are you quoting? According to FCC?
According to FCC and all the studies that have been to date.
Okay, yeah, but
the
we
general
also
scientific the right. General scientific consensus.
Yeah,
on that subject.
We also have to realize the FCC has no jurisdiction over public health. That's, you know, that's not their jurisdiction.
Questions? Any other questions? Seeing none, then we will close public comment, bring it back to the commission for discussion, and hopefully action. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Who would like to lead off?
I guess I'll start with this one. You know, seeing as FCC has pretty much taken the purview of radiation emissions out of our hands, the way I understand it is our basic limitations on control on this is architectural. Anything in any areas that's over 100% of the exposure rate. So my concern is on the plume on the adjacent property, and just having just for belts and suspenders, making sure we have a condition there that we're not imposing a hazard on the adjacent property for future development, or a restriction on their ability to use their property rights also. So I would just like, I'll need help on this as some kind of terminology that we have. We put in a condition that any future development would require a...
You actually don't have to do that. They couldn't impose it. They can't impose a condition that would limit the development of the adjacent property, meaning that property owner, if they were doing something along those lines, could take them to court.
Okay.
They can't have some imposition from their development that restricts the development on the other lot without, coming to some sort of agreement with those other folks.
Okay.
So that's already a lose position if that was what was happening. Like, they came in and said, we want to do two stories. Like, sorry, you can't do two stories now because of the radiation emissions from the adjacent cell tower site. They would have recourse through the courts to address that.
Okay, and so that would...
But if I can interpret, I think what he's saying is we just want a post-construction report that shows that the actual radiation emitted is within FCC guidelines.
But we have a condition for that.
Too, but also just, so in future development on the adjacent property would not be impinged, and it would be on AT&T's dime, basically, that they would have to show that it would be well within the limits if this person wants to put a two-story, nursing home right on that corner. Is that correct, or we wouldn't have to do a planning commission?
Like I said,
condition?
The condition is a condition on this project that
it demonstrates compliance.
Yeah, I mean, so it doesn't really matter if something along those lines were to happen, then AT&T would have to address the situation there. If they took a look at it, said, hey, we're going to build a two story building now, and here's our bedrooms right here facing over here, right, and the exposure limit was beyond 100% in that area, then they would have recourse because they would be impinging upon their ability to develop that site.
But I'm just concerned about the communication route that would happen during that. If somebody builds there and the facade is going to be identical to the rest of it, other than the AT&T signals being blocked by somebody standing there, there would be no pathway that would trigger a review or would even trigger AT&T knowing that there would be maybe a problem there. Or is there a pathway that they would be notified on an adjacent development?
There's a requirement that area be signed. There would be some caution signs, et cetera. So it's not like that wall actually is going to be absolutely blank. You will see notification of there. I mean, the required sign. There's required safety signage that will be on that wall.
Okay. I'm just a little concerned that this could slip through the cracks pretty easily. All I'm saying is that if development is proposed there, that there is some red flag that tags AT&T to say that this could be a problem. And then they may be able to get together with the adjacent developer and buy air rights or something. I'm just looking for a critical path here.
Well, it would be easy enough for staff to just make a note at that address to that there's an adjacent, telecommunication facility.
Yeah, the best probably mechanism is what Whitney's talking about, that we internally place maybe a memo in the file for the adjacent property so that staff knows. When that comes forward, you always go back and look historically at what's in the file mm-hmm. for what's going on there, and so you would be able to find that then. Moving forward, we're working on a new tracking system where we could just flag the site.
Yeah.
But right now, we don't have it in place yet. So,
because we haven't had a situation where we're basically putting this plume out into somebody else's habitable airspace. And so I'd just like to see, I think that would be great if just we have notification in the file somewhere for that.
I think we can absolutely do that. And yeah. Maybe as much as a memo and a copy of the permit that went for the adjacent site so the planners
okay.
would see.
Great.
I mean, I think that's, like I said, awesome. In the future we'll have a mechanism that makes this really easy. Anytime we need to flag properties, we'll be able to do that. We just don't have it right now.
Yeah.
So, Scott, I would be particularly concerned about a prospective purchaser of the adjacent property. So what you're suggesting would alert the prospective purchaser to this installation next door. And the reason
it would be in our files. I mean, we have no way to record anything against the adjacent property. We can't make that happen.
Okay.
We can't write a condition that says you have to go record this on the adjacent property. They have no ability to record anything on the adjacent property.
No. I'm not. I'm asking a question at this point, as between a prospective buyer of the adjacent property and the current owner of the adjacent property, and the whole issue of what constitutes adequate disclosure. So at this point, I decide I want to buy the property. The current owner doesn't really want to mention anything about the antenna. And probably doesn't, and so the prospective buyer, when he buys the property at this point, really doesn't have a way to find out, except by just nosing around. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. And this is quite apart from the preempted notion of safety, but frankly, some people would prefer not to buy a property near that kind of an installation, and that can affect market value in a significant way.
I mean, the good thing, like Whitney says, is there's required signage that has to be placed on the building. So were you to go out to the site, you could see it, potentially, if you looked that direction.
Okay. Well,
one thing, you know, is it ideal? I mean, is it perfect? No. But I mean, there are a couple things. If they came in and talked to us, they might be able to look through, you know, the history on this property and then find that memo. So somebody's coming in to buy, a lot of times they will contact us and ask us questions about the property and things like that.
Actually, as I'm thinking about it, it might be, and I think you're working on it, might be a good idea just to have a map that designates where these installations are, and then anyone who's considering buying a piece of property could go look at the map and, you know, find out where his property is vis-a-vis these installations.
Yeah, Scott, you can do that in your spare time.
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point we probably will have that. When we started looking into it, when that was suggested last time, we ran into roadblocks there because there were supposedly, you know, several websites you could go to go get the information. We went to them, and the information on those websites was incorrect. So we were like, well, that's not tremendously helpful. And so in our records, in our tracking systems and so forth, when you track it, we know where a lot of the sites are. We just don't necessarily know where all of them are. And so we kind of ran into a little bit of a roadblock there. Just internally, which is why it didn't go a whole lot further. But we actually have folks now in our engineering division that do GIS, and so maybe we could take another, you know, run at that and see if we could find better information.
So, Scott, is the county on their GIS system doesn't even track these?
I'm not going to say no, but I don't know that. I've not seen that layer available. They currently have a public-facing server for GIS information on there, and the last time I looked at it, I don't remember seeing a layer or anything in there that indicated that. I'm not going to say it's not there. They might have it. I just don't remember seeing it.
Would that maybe an easy communication to make to the county, or is it?
It's worth a call or, you know, email.
Yeah.
Joe? Comments?
Yeah, I do. Let's see, first thought. You know, this, in some sense, this commission is, in quotes, a regulatory body. I mean, we're trying to regulate one thing or another. And we're confronted with what government is always confronted when it's dealing with highly technical problems. We're reliant on the technical know-how of the people we're being asked to regulate, which I won't say puts us at an unfair disadvantage, but certainly a disadvantage. But in this particular case, because it's been in existence in 2006, and because they've done a noteworthy job of avoiding visual blight, and the reports seem to take into consideration the requisite health concerns, I don't have a significant problem with this. But I think it's an opportunity to examine the greater issue, particularly when telecommunications companies come to seek new installations. And I'll allude to it through the question I was asking before. I'll even go back to an old adage that the people who exercise real power are not the people who make the decisions, but really the ones who frame the questions to be decided. So, if a telecommunication company is thinking of needing three or four or half a dozen installations, so they look at locations and they look at antenna height and they look at output, and they also look at cost, and these issues, these parameters are jumbled together, and they find something that's in the best interest of the telecommunication company, which may or may not be synonymous with the best interest of the municipality or the community at large. So I think it's really incumbent on us to have some sort of independent vetting of these proposals. And I realize that that's an expensive proposition, but these are very well-heeled applicants, and I think in the future, again, not for this, because this is just an extension, but I think if and when someone comes to us with a request for new applications and new locations, that we should be able to go to an outside consultant and have them evaluate this. And it should be at the cost of the applicant. I don't think it would be an undue economic burden for them. Let's see if I have anything else to say. No, I think that's pretty much what I wanted to say.
Richard?
Following up what you said, Joe, I think we're here already, and we've been here for a while. I feel that this application is, in a sense, new. It's a issue that is long overdue and should have been where we have, the staff has a good inventory of what the cell towers are, where they are, and how many different antennas are at these locations. Regarding the FCC guidelines, those are, once again, FCC is not in charge of public health. They don't have anything to really, no jurisdiction over that. One of the areas that is unique to our area is that NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Agency, and the U.S. Department of Interior should be involved, because we're a bird migration area, and this is all part of the accumulative effects on this whole area as a whole. And I feel that in this particular case, I think we are doing a disservice to the neighborhood, especially the neighbor that is limiting. It's going to affect the property owner's ability for an economic, it's going to affect them economically, having this facility there and with this intensity. I would like to ask Scott, is the city having this installation get any funds for having an installation on this building, or is it strictly between that and the owner and the AT&T?
It's development on private property, so other than, you know, permitting fees.
Yeah, they don't get anything. I would like, I'm of the opinion that any cell tower, any cell installation should be put on hold until we have a general plan that deals with this at this time. That's my opinion, because it's long overdue.
Michael.
Well, I think the slope's kind of slippery. You know, we get this technology and everybody wants the benefits of it, and then we start seeing fake trees in the middle of nowhere, and then we start co-locate things on city infrastructure parcels, and then we start seeing them show up on steeples in the middle of properties, and then pretty soon we're putting them next to residences, and we have the authority, they have the authority to put them next to schools, as we've looked at other locations in this, and you know, so now this is the first one that I can remember that's actually bathing another property in this amount of radiation. And we have an exhibit, figure 6, that shows within the building envelope of the adjacent owner, we have an over 100% condition. And it's unconscionable to me why we would let anybody create a condition on an adjacent property that creates a condition over 100%, which, if that's what the FCC wants to put out there as the number, we can't allow that to be on an adjacent property. I would like to see us notice anything that's over the 5%, and I'd like to see us not allow anything that puts over 100% on an adjacent property. I think that's unconscionable, whatever mechanism we would have for recording these things, because somebody's not going to do the work at some point, and somebody's going to miss it. And if I was that adjacent owner, I'd be in here very upset about this. And I'm not the first one to defend property rights, but I think there's something about I can deal with the 5% bath next door, 5 to 100% bath, but I cannot understand how we can, just because that existing house is not inside the 100%, above 100% plume, why? But it's part of the adjacent property owner's right to build in that, we'd rely on some memo in a file somewhere to safeguard the property. So I'm for relocation such that documents can produce that above 100% is contained on the property of the owner.
Well, again, I think we all understand, I think we all get it, that the FCC is the controlling agency here with regard to electromagnetic radiation safety. And that, as I recall, the law specifically says that a local agency cannot deny a project that meets the FCC standards, that is within the FCC standards. For the life of me, I can't figure out how this report demonstrates that the project is within FCC standards. As a matter of fact, it's almost the opposite, because if you look at the definition of general population exposures, it says general population uncontrolled exposures apply in situations in which the general public may be exposed, not will be exposed, not are going to be exposed as a result of the project, but may be exposed. In other words, does this set up a situation where people are going to be within that 100% plume. I can see, you know, Whitney says, well, you know, if they build a structure that's 25 feet high, it'll block the antenna and they'll have to find a different solution. What if they build a structure that's 20 feet tall with the roof deck on top of it and have weddings up there? What's the situation then? So I can certainly conceive of situations where development on the adjacent property would result in exposure that's greater than that. I'm also confused by the fact that in this report they have figures which give exposure limits for all carriers and figures that give exposure results for AT&T only, and they're different, and AT&T is the only carrier here. So how do you know? I just don't. I mean, it may be fine, it may meet the FCC standards, but this report does not convince me that that is the case. So then we're just kind of left in the situation of, we have a choice, really. We have a choice. We can say, well, we'll take your word for it that it meets the standards, you know, or we can say, give us a better report that demonstrates that. And personally, I would be in the camp of saying, come back to us with an adequate EME report that will show us that those standards, which are listed frequency by frequency in Appendix A, are met by this project at the property line at all levels. I mean, that's, to me, that's the least we can do.
Okay, I just want to get on one more point that actually you brought up, Chair Taft. I think we dropped a little bit, was the actual permitting of these appendages on the top of the roof. From what I understood, Whitney, that you said that there was no record of approval of the planning condition that approved the mechanical site on the roof here for the elevator, the hoistway. So was that true?
I did not find a specific planning approval for the mechanical equipment related to the elevator. There was, however, a very specific planning approval for the height limitation for the existing installation of antennas around that elevator penthouse.
Okay. That's clarification. I'm sorry I missed that. But there isn't an exemption for a new, you know, equipment room on top, is there? So like what I'm saying is, I actually like what you did with siting the antenna below the top of the parapet on the existing roof. But if we request that they come back with an alternate plan, their first option is to go ahead and set it above the roof line, and that would get the emissions over the top of the building envelope of the adjacent property. So what I'm saying is that I wouldn't be, you know,
that would require you to make a new finding for a height exception.
Okay, it wouldn't be included in the existing height exemption then?
No.
Okay. Okay, great. I just wanted to clarify that, because, Chair, you brought that up, and I thought that got lost a little bit.
It would be good to get direction from you, possibly, though, regarding that, if that was something that your commission was headed toward for the benefit of the applicant, to locate proposed new antennas on the east wall, kind of as they did previously, which would require that additional rooftop facility.
You know, one other issue that I have with this report too is that it shows the adjacent property on the, I guess, south side, but it doesn't show anything off-site to the north side of the building, which is a public street, and you've got lobes of EMF going out in that direction that are in the 100 to 500% range, according to figure two, and yet they're just cut off. I'd like to know how far out those go and, you know, at what level. And the other thing, and you brought this up, Commissioner Lehr, that the categories are peculiar. You know, in other words, to have, you know, just less than 5% and greater than 5% up to infinity seems, you know, I mean, it seems to me it would be, you know, something in the range of less than 5%, 5 to 25%, 25 to 50%, 50 to 100%. I mean, that's just kind of a logical way to present data. Again, I find this report to be quite confusing and difficult to draw conclusions from. And I would like to see at the property line, I would like to see the specific power densities for each one of the frequencies, not just the composite that the computer spits out.
I have seen other reports that showed the plume extending beyond the property line. I think we got that for Quintana,
yeah.
You know, down to how far does it go before it gets to the 100% level, for
well,
instance.
The one on Quintana, I don't know if they've installed that one yet, but that's the one that had the trailer park as an adjacency, that we raised the same issues there. But they didn't have this level of radiation going out to that trailer park, because that trailer park someday is going to be a three-story building, just like the Quintana building is, or at least a two-story. And I just don't understand why we keep ignoring the issue of that we have mansionization with one-story houses going into two- and three-story structures, and everyone's occupying the roof on these buildings now. And I it's just, to me, it is an issue. It's a debatable issue. Richard and I aren't going to be in this motel for or our friends, you know, because we're concerned about the viability of those federal guidelines. But when it comes to something that we have in front of us that says it's a hazard over someone else's property, I think that's we have to solve that. We can't allow it to just keep, because we're going to have how many more? When we looked at this before, we estimated there might be 30, 40 more installations coming in the city based on, it's one of those ones when we ask, well, where's, it's like we got 10 of these in a row last year. Where's the saturation point? And that's why we asked about the map. Because people like me, when they come in, I'm going to ask the homeowner, show me the cell towers around there. And we can't even do that. So I think that's why we have to protect the adjacent property rights.
So I think we're kind of getting to be of one. Let me see if I can summarize a little bit. You know, that basically we, you know, we, and the, I guess the question is, really, should we continue this based on the fact that we don't find that Exhibit C adequately demonstrates compliance with FCC guidelines for general population exposure to EME. I mean, I think that's our finding. I think that's our, you know, the question is. So I'm getting the sense that we're not moving towards an approval tonight. So the question is, do we want to continue this and give the applicant an opportunity to give us better information? Do we want to deny it?
Well, I don't know if we really have. Well, the authority to deny it, because we would have to, say that, I don't even know on what basis we would deny it other than aesthetics, but I do like the idea of simply saying that compliance hasn't been demonstrated.
Well, that would be a basis for denying it.
Well, Oh, I see what you're saying.
Well, but on the other hand, I mean, I kind of feel like our process is not complete here. In other words, yeah. we haven't worked this through at our level to the degree that it needs to be worked through.
Well, I would agree, because the applicant would probably ask rightly, well, what do I need to do? And we should be able to tell him forthrightly what he needs to do, or nothing else, for the future.
Well, and I think we've given guidelines. You know, I do think we've talked about wanting to see more off-site property. I think we want to see individual frequencies, and I think we particularly want to see what the actual levels are at the adjacent property line to the south. I mean, those are, and maybe as part of this process, we should come up with other information that we'd like to see included.
I think that the one thing I'll say that I did like is there was a graphic demonstration of these areas. I think showing the complete coverage of the 5 to 100%, and then where anything is over 100% is absolutely critical. We need to know if we have these, you know, adjacent sites across the street from each other, though that was just 5% going into the street. Well, the other one's 5%. Well, that all of a sudden might be more than two things at 5%. You know, we don't have the capacity yet to allow these folks to really know where the other adjacencies are for these things. That's what scares me, is that we're having a proliferation of these things. The one when we looked last year where they were diagonally across the street from each other. We don't really know these things, that it's easy for these folks to identify where these things are, unless it's their own facility. So I think the complete demonstration graphically of the full, you know, above 5 to 100%, and then above 100% is really critical. Whatever it takes on the map to do it, that's what you have to do, I think.
Good direction.
I think the city needs some homework to do. We really do. And I think that, you know, we need to get the council direction and to get this, the bigger picture. This is part of neighborhood compatibility, okay? And, you know, we can argue if, you know, this is brain cancer and stuff or whatever. But let me ask you something, Scott. If you had a newborn and the city comes in, puts a cell tower in your, like, right out your backyard, you know, that's going to be a concern, okay? You would be concerned, regardless of what your opinion is, you know? It would be a concern. And that's why I look at it, like, from a public. That's what we have to look at. We have applicants, we have property owners, but we got to look at it the public. And I think the public deserves to have at least a comprehensive picture. Otherwise, we're doing piecemeal. It's kind of like that Johnny Cash song, One Piece at a Time. It never turns out good, you know? You got to have a more integrated approach.
Yeah. But I think getting the information that Michael was talking about, knowing really where the exposure is, and then eventually knowing where the cell sites are, and then hopefully eventually having that exposure map for each cell site, is beginning to accumulate the kind of database that you're talking about.
Well, and I entirely agree with that. But again, maybe we should hold that discussion. I'm thinking in terms of the future, where, see, we're not privy to discussions that exist within the telecommunication company about how, well, we could do this with 6 installations at a lower height and a lower emission level, but that's financially challenging, so we'll have fewer installations at a higher emission level and a higher height, and that will serve. And I'd like to see if there aren't other configurations that serve us better.
I don't know if we're technically equipped.
Well, we're not.
to deal with that information.
No, clearly we're not. The suggestion before us is a good suggestion for right now, but because of the expertise of this board. But you know, we hadn't noticed certain things, or what if there are other things that are, escape our purview? The fact is, we don't have a comparable technical expertise to really examine the details.
We don't, and that precisely is why it's incumbent upon the applicant to demonstrate to us that the FCC criteria are met. We accept the FCC criteria. We're not debating those. What we're saying is this does not, maybe if you're an electrical engineer, this is perfectly clear, but this is a planning commission, you know, and they need to demonstrate to the planning commission that the FCC criteria have been met.
Well, and again, I'm not arguing, but in response, it might be the second pass of that report still might not demonstrate it to.
Then we'll deal with that.
or it might, but we might even be.
Well, and in all fairness, you know, this is the second or third that we've dealt with in the last few years, couple of years. And I think we're beginning to generate a better awareness among ourselves and among staff as to what we need to see when we're looking at these things.
Okay, I think we've handled the technical end. I think we still need to question up as we need to give direction to staff and to the applicant of what the next run at it or might. Possible run out of might be as far as physical appendages onto the building. You know, I'm of the persuasion that, you know, an elevator hoistway is similar to a chimney cap. It probably wasn't included in the original plans. The original plans probably used a hydraulic elevator where everything's in a pit and you used a ram. They went with a hoistway because it was faster and cheaper. It's a faster elevator and a cheaper elevator. So that's why the appendage became on top of the roof, and that's probably why it wasn't permitted in the first place. That this was during a construction phase change that they then said, oh, well, we'll just build it up another 7 to 13 feet. But I don't see a nexus of cell towers with chimney caps. So, you know, as long as they can co-locate it in that structure, I don't see unless we specifically exempt it or give a variance for it, you know, I don't see a reason to allow a whole nother appendage on this building that would increase its height. So how would the commission feel about that?
I didn't think one was being proposed.
Well, the first proposal was one.
Oh, the first one. Yeah.
And then if we're considering that we do not want to have that emission plume into the building envelope of the adjacent property.
As a solution, I see.
The first solution is the one they proposed at the first run is to set it higher. And then it essentially plumes out over the top of the adjacent building envelope. So the question is, you know, if we deny this or continue it, is that a viable solution that this planning commission would accept?
You know, am I to understand that right now that little top building doesn't have a permit for the height?
No, it does have a permit. It was permitted with the original cell site installation in 2006.
But
it just wasn't shown as rooftop mechanical with the original permit for the hotel.
Right. So then that was put in, and then they said, oh, we built this thing. Now we're going to follow up with the permit. Is that the way it worked?
Maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, who knows with regard to that? It showed up there. We may have permitted it. We just can't find evidence of that. And then someone came along and they wanted to put. They said, "Hey, this would be a great location for a cell site." And so they came through. And then we eventually ended up. Well, we couldn't find the permits that allowed that thing to be there. And so we permitted it as part of that application.
No,
Yeah. You know, we're sitting there, you know, there's people getting, you know, in trouble with trees and code enforcement, and then this kind of stuff, you know, is allowed. We have to have some consistency here. And this infrastructure, I don't know, it just seems to me it has to have a little more thought.
Well, I don't, in all fairness, I think the process for the what's generously called a penthouse would probably be different if it happened today than it was back in the 80s or whenever it happened. I think Jerry brings up a good point. The question is, if this were made more compliant, or if it's necessary to comply with FCC regulations regarding exposure of adjacent persons, would we accept a second architectural extension at that end of the building?
That goes back to, we don't have the kit of parts to know what you have in your capabilities. The vertical antenna seems counterintuitive. If I want to spread on a horizon like this, it would seem to me that someone would make a series of smaller ones that I could frame a certain spectrum on the horizon rather than going vertically and adding strips like this. So to me, as an architect, it's counterintuitive to go vertical instead of horizontal with these things, but I don't know the physics of what you have to do. A lower penthouse than the one that was originally shown, I think, could be possible, but we'd have to see it. The one that was shown originally, I would agree with staff, was not compatible with, start to look like England with all these chimney tops and pretty. We're going to see these in every block. That's what it's going to be. We're getting density like that. It's every other block almost, and it's so this is a real issue. And I think the aesthetics are one we can control, and I think the demonstration of the 100% thing is something we can control. So somewhere in between there, what are the tools they have to come up with alternate technical solutions? With the understanding not every site may be viable. I think it's ironic that the people who had put all the telephone poles in the city way back when are on tops of buildings. I think there's a pole right outside there that's a lot bigger than the building.
The problem with getting too specific is there's probably a lot of different possible combinations. I mean, I could see, for example, antennas that were somewhat elevated but were set back from the corner of the building in order to provide the far field coverage with an antenna that's mounted in the wall like these are for the near field coverage. And yet, you know, the radiation exposure would be cut to one end, close in on the adjacent property, would be cut from three antennas to one antenna. So there's probably a lot of different technical solutions that would, you know, that would be viable, and honestly, you know, I would think that the commission would be, if as this process goes forward, if some of those possible solutions come out, I think the commission would be more than open to staff bringing those forward as discussion items to give further guidance, you know, but to try and meld the aesthetics. I mean, I think we've given some sense, but to try and get more specific and meld the technical requirements with the architectural preferences too far down the road might be tough at this point.
Well,
Well, if I may, that's why I included the slides of the previous proposal. So you sort of have a notion of if your commission were to support having the antennas be up higher on the east side, you're kind of looking at their solution to that.
I'll just give my own opinion. I mean, I think that's a little much. That's beginning to, I mean, that's pretty prominent. It's pretty tall and it's pretty close to the edge of the building. I think it'd have to be better than that to work.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if I could make a motion to deny the project.
Okay. Typically, you know, we give the applicant choice, you know, for denial or continuance. It depends on.
Well, let's kind of take a little straw poll and see if there is a because I don't think I would support a denial. I think a continuance is more appropriate to the.
Yeah. So I would support a continuance, if nothing else, in the spirit of cooperation and learning more about what the totality of choices are that the company has. The more often they come back to us and tell us about other configurations, the more we'll know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be open to seeing it again with a different solution, but my parameters are property line, 100%.
Okay.
I would go with what the applicant wanted to do. I could see a continuance, or if they were preferable to denial and then take it to the city council on their own, then I would wish them well. But.
Yeah, it's just in this situation, and normally I agree with that. You know, normally, it's just in this situation, I feel like sending it over to city council, we haven't really done our job. You know, we haven't really vetted it sufficiently. So that's why I would be more supportive of a continuance. So. Let's ask the applicant, see what they have to say. They may not get what they want, but you're not going to get it. I mean, the handwriting's on the wall. We're not going to approve it tonight. The question is whether you would prefer that we continue it so that you can address some of the issues that we brought up, or whether you would prefer that we just deny the project so that you can appeal it to the city council.
In this case, I would request the continuance. But I would like very, very clear instructions on what to come back with. So, you know, we can make sure that all five of you are in a good, are comfortable making an informed decision on whether to move forward or not.
Very well. So let's see if we can get let's hit it one more time and see if we can give as specific guidance to the applicant as possible.
Okay.
Thank you. So you can have a seat. I'll close public comment, okay. And we'll try and hammer it out. And I think Michael's concern is probably in terms of the specific issue that is sticking the most is the greater than 100% exposure on the adjacent property. And I think this commission is considering the fact that the level of that exposure is buildable, okay, that people legally may be occupying that space. We're considering that represents potential exposure of the public, which does not appear to us to be consistent with FCC guidelines. So I guess we either need an explanation of how that is consistent, or we need that yellow plume to go away. Is that?
I would concur on the emissions part of that.
And I think it would be valuable to see the full 5 to 100% plume, even if it means you have to take the image of the diagram across the street. We need to see the total projection of that 5 to 100%, and then anything that's over 100%.
Extent of any contours that are greater than 5%. I would like to see the exposure contours for each of the specific frequency ranges as well. Or at least if it's too difficult to construct the contours, I'd like to at least see the maximum exposure level at the property line for each of the frequency ranges. And I'd also like to see an explanation of why there's a difference between the AT&T contours and the all carriers contours, since AT&T is the only carrier there.
Do we want to give guidance on architectural features?
On architectural features. If you want to take a shot at it, go ahead. I think it's going to be. I think as I heard the consensus, the commission would consider some extension in order to elevate the antennas. If it can be kept away from the periphery of the building and is not excessively tall. And I think that's all we can say. I don't think we can say we'll approve it. I don't think we can say we'll disapprove it, but I think I think what we're saying is it's reasonable to explore that avenue, and that we welcome them bringing different architectural solutions back as discussion items for preliminary input before they go to all the work of generating one of these for an architectural treatment that we may not feel is appropriate. So,
would it be out of bounds to ask for since we're a bird migratory area, would it be out of bounds to ask for some kind of information and some kind of study on the effects from this radiation?
I think we're precluded.
It would only be for information, Richard, because we have to go with the FCC.
Yeah, I mean, we're preempted. I mean, I probably get a memo from the city attorney's office to that effect, but I mean, that's the kind of bottom line. I mean,
yeah, but I think Scott, humor me, yeah. But I think that it might be worth looking into that a little bit, because there's an area where we could possibly take a look at it, and I'm not sure, but it might be order number 13186. And it's under the Department of Interiors. But like I said, it's something that I don't want you spending a whole bunch of time on, but I do want to make a note of it.
So if there's no further discussion, do we have a motion? And would you prefer we continue this to a date uncertain because we really don't know how long this process is going to take?
Yes, please. Yeah.
I move we continue CPO-465 and UPO-411 to a date uncertain.
Scott, can we adopt a finding if we're continuing it, or is that something we can only do at the end?
Okay.
Very good.
I mean, should we confirm with the applicant that he has enough guidance to?
Yeah. Can we get a second for discussion on the motion?
I'll second.
Okay. So then discussion on the motion. Certainly, we can. So I'll open it for public. I'll open the meeting for public comment again to hear from the applicant.
Thank you for reopening the public comment period. Okay, so what I'm hearing is you'd like to see another crack at the EME report that goes into shows all the contours greater than 100% off property.
Greater than 5%.
Greater than 5% and beyond, essentially.
Right.
To show the full extent of those contours. And let's see, contours 4% exposure of the contours of each frequency range or maximum exposure at the property line for each frequency range. Kayron, well, he's coming up. Wanted to get clarification on the coming back with additional designs. Is that something you?
I think where that comes from is when we're looking at Figure 6.
Right, the adjacent property owner for the greater than 100%.
Right.
Contour that's extending over that property. How to mitigate that?
Right. Right. We're interpreting that as a potential public exposure.
Okay.
So we would anticipate that some other configuration is going to be necessary. Some other configuration of antennas is going to be necessary to modify those
to take it outside that contours. Building envelope.
Right. We don't know what that would mean architecturally. Okay, like I said, it could mean leaving one of the antennas in the wall there in order to cover the near field, and moving a couple of them back from the edge of the building to cover the far distance. You know, the flashlight analogy that you were giving.
Yeah. Okay.
And elevating them some, you know. So what we're saying is that there may be some architectural changes that will be necessary to accomplish this goal, of fixing Figure 6.
Okay.
And we invite you to think that through a little bit. And if you come up with, you know, at the same time, we feel that extension is probably excessive. Okay. What we're suggesting is before you go through all the work of doing this detailed report, EME report, if you come up with some sort of approximate ideas as to what architecturally that could work out, we're inviting you to come back, bring it back as a discussion item, okay, and let us talk about that before you invest the money to do this more detailed report.
Well, to clarify to speak directly on that point, in order to create this report, in order to find out what those levels are like, we need to come up with the design. So if we come back, I guess what I'd like to find out is Given the building envelope, given the development rights on the adjacent property, if the new exhibit shows that it falls within, say, a setback, but doesn't extend into an actual building envelope, developable building envelope, would that be something that the Planning Commission would be okay with? Because, you know, you can't, technically you can't build into a setback. I mean, this is not a zero lot line situation, so, you know, they would have to adhere to a setback, just like this building does too. So if we could drill down and have like a finer grain grid to show, because, you know, the green grids on these exhibits are 10 by 10. I mean, if we drill it down so it's finer grain, have the contours being, you know, instead of 5%, 0 to 5% and then greater than 5%, you know, maybe have it 0 to 5%, 5 to 10, you know, just have a finer grain, you know, of contours on here, so that way there's not as much ambiguity, you know, on these exhibits, and are quite frankly not as confusing, and expanding the scope of these exhibits. I mean, would that, along those lines, would that help? I mean,
the finer grain would be good, but if it still shows the greater than 100% extending into developable area,
right,
then we've got a problem.
And what I mean by developable area, I mean, you're not including the setback.
That's a good question. Let's get a consensus on that.
I would say we're talking about buildable envelopes. You know, for me, that's where the exposure is going to be. You're not going to have somebody spending, you know, a whole lot of time on a cherry picker, you know, 20 feet up off the ground. So, but you're going to have somebody sleeping in their bedroom,
washing the windows, but that's an occupational exposure. It's a higher limit.
Exactly. So I'm most concerned about buildable envelope.
The only thing I'd say to that is there are conditions in the code that allow extensions of upper floor footprints into there's some bay window exceptions and things like that. I'm trying to think what other things are out there. We always have exceptions and variances people could ask for, but I don't necessarily want to make it contingent on that. But I'm just trying to remember in my experience, there are ways you can get more square footage on upper floors that we do allow certain, what do we call it, Scott?
So if you had a mixed use, okay, so here's the example. You have a mixed use building, it's commercial to meet the zoning, right? Secondary use is residential, it's on the second floor and has a deck or balcony that extends towards that property line. That can extend into a setback, so it can be closer. So your point being about the setback, I think, is yes, things can go out into the setback where people could be spending time. So I think your point's well taken.
But the question is likelihood. You know what I'm saying? It gets to a question of reasonable expectation. And, you know, yeah, they could build a deck there, but how much time are they actually going to spend on the part of the deck that's over the setback line?
The side that faces the water.
I mean, if you had a residential unit, we went mixed use there, the deck would be at the corner because that's where the view of the ocean is.
Yeah.
So it would be as close as possible to that location, if it were there.
But you'd get good coverage.
It's right. Let me build a deck to overlook the Twin Dolphin, the wall of the Twin Dolphin.
I think we should be mindful that the applicant and the telecommunication company is also operating in some sense without a roadmap as well, and we can decide this case and then formulate more suitable rules.
But they're asking, would we accept 100% exposure within the setback area but not within the buildable area?
I would accept that too. This is a case that we have to decide now or soon, and then we could formulate.
There's no way that you can have 100% policy. I mean, the obvious question, we're rewriting the zoning code. What if we change the setbacks, you know? So again, we kind of have to deal with what's reasonable, what makes sense, what's likely.
Yeah, I would just say that we know we're trying to encourage mixed-use residential commercial downtown. So the likelihood of that house being there in 10 years, it's very possible that that's a developable parcel, that because of its proximity to town, it's not in the most dense area. I could easily see that a mixed use, if not a denser residential zone. So I don't think we want to do anything that gets away from the exposure issue. And I do think it's a design problem that, you know, we don't have the array of devices, but you do.
I've got a question on that.
Yeah.
And I even though I represent AT&T, I still need to go back and ask them about this. But would the commission be open to entertaining a condition of approval such that if the neighboring property is redeveloped to a multi-story use, that this sector of antennas be either, you know, taken out, relocated, or, you know, some sort of a mitigation measure, you know, at that time, because we don't know. That neighboring property can be redeveloped, yeah. You know, tomorrow. It could be 5 years, 50 years. I mean, it could be at the time when technology has gone to such a point where these antennas are, you know, no longer needed. I'm a little...
That's an enforceable condition.
That is an enforceable condition.
So, oh. I'm not saying for right now, I'm not seeking an approval or anything like that to change, you know, going on from the continuance, but, I mean, I hear the concerns, I totally understand, I agree the readability and clarity of this report is not what it should be. My apologies on that. I'd like to, you know, just kind of move this project forward as much as we can and see if that's something that's you know, palatable.
Can I ask you something? Is there any way you could also look at, for your coverage, another location in your reanalysis, or are you stuck on this location?
We're stuck on this location because this particular application is just for a modification to bring LTE technology here. If we were doing a brand new facility, I would wholeheartedly agree with you. I'd say, okay, fine, we get it. It doesn't fit at this location. We need to find something else. It just doesn't make sense to build essentially a new site and add to the proliferation issue that you've raised, you know, within the city for what is essentially going to be three antennas to bring LTE. And quite frankly, since I'm not an RF engineer, you know, by trade, I'm not entirely sure that's even possible to just have, you know, just the LTE antennas at a separate location from the rest of the antennas. So I don't want to posit the notion that it's even possible. I don't even want to commit to that because I honestly don't even have the answer to that.
Yeah, because if you're saying, okay, if this guy is going to build a two-story house mixed use, we'll move the antennas. You're going to move them someplace, right?
Right. And, at that point, I mean, it would be when that, you know, we could, as cliched as this is, I mean, we would have, AT&T would have to cross that bridge when they get to it.
I'm comfortable with the condition on that because it's basically putting it on them rather than on the property owner next door. Mm-hmm. You know, at this point, you know, they're shooting over the top of the, you know, basically shooting over the top of the occupied space. But in the, you know, my biggest concern was I didn't want the adjacent property owner to be incumbent upon them to not have a safety hazard on their own property. Mm-hmm. That was not of their making. And this does that, and I, you know, that's kind of where I was going, and I commend you for pulling that up. So I'm comfortable with that. How's the rest of the commission?
Well, I'm comfortable with it if If the applicant can work with the planning staff to take the technical data, to take the exposure levels and convert those into physical specifications. In other words, rather than saying, you know, if they build something that goes into the greater than 100% plume, then the antenna has to be set. You know, I wanted to say, you know, if they build a habitable space that extends higher than 15 feet, you know, within X number of feet of the property. So, in other words, because then whoever owns that property will understand that. You know, they won't have to go and look for the EMF report.
But it would be incumbent upon AT&T to... The trigger is to AT&T,
right,
not to the property owner.
Right, but in other words, it would be written out in the trigger would be then written out in specific physical dimensions.
Yeah.
You know, higher than this, closer than that to the rear property line, closer to that to the side property line.
I just don't understand what mechanism we have to do that. They're not going to be monitoring permits through the city.
No. So we'd be locking AT&T into that requirement. That's a condition of approval for their project, and so we would do what we said we were going to do, and we would paper the other file for that adjacent property that has that information with it. So when that property came forward for development, then that information would be available, and we would be able to put that forward and contact AT&T. You have a condition that's on your project that you agreed to, that you signed the conditions of approval for, and they're going two-story. I mean, one of the they've already told you, if you put a two-story house, if you put a two-story structure next to it, it's already going to make the facility the way that it's designed currently not function to the way they need it to function. It's not going to have the coverage it would otherwise need, and they'd have to do something anyway. So I think that's why I came up with the condition. I mean, that wasn't too tough of a, you know, sleuthing to
right.
get to that point. He really said, well, once it goes two-story next door anyway, this becomes no longer viable, and we need to do something else anyhow. So that made sense.
Well, but again, there are possible scenarios where it would not, and the roof deck being, you know, an obvious scenario. So that would need to be included in the condition somehow. You know, that needs to be taken into account.
It could just be, you know, anytime redevelopment is done or development is done on that property, it triggers a review.
It could be done that way, but I would, you know, what that's doing is it's putting off the analysis until a later date. You know, I would like to just go ahead and do the analysis now and, you know, put it there.
If I may, that's actually a really good suggestion, because to analyze the hypotheticals and identify at what point, you know, the emissions may or may not, you know, start and stop, you know, at the 100% level. To establish that scope, what are we looking at? I mean,
at which level? Like level?
To show on a map, or actually in 3D space, where the 100% levels start and stop. You know, at 100%, because I mean we have it on
like surface by surface, two dimension, right?
Right.
And then if you want to have like three dimension, we have to have like 20.
So for each height increment, yeah, we would have to have another figure. I mean, what Commissioner Luhr, what you had suggested, that's actually a pretty good idea, in that when staff gets a development application on the neighboring property, then staff could notify AT&T and say, hey, there's an application for development on this property. We need you to model the EME emissions, projected EME emissions, on what is being proposed on this property, and then take action based on that. If it's still over 100% in what is being built here, then AT&T, you need to go and, you know, find another place. That way,
That way, it limits the amount. You still get the information that you're seeking, ultimately, and it's based on the information that's present at that time, instead of hypotheticals.
I know we have a motion to continue, but if we could get this conditioned as such on the original application, I would be comfortable with sending this forward with that condition.
We still don't have the full mapping of the plumes.
You know, we wouldn't really need it because it's still going over the habitable space now. At the time where they would have that habitable space, the time that develops, they would develop the full information. Then the full. So
I think that, well,
but we have one motion already on the table.
Yeah, well, this is discussion on the motion. Oh. But I think that the mapping information is useful as information. I think that's why we need to ask for that. I think Michael's point was that members of the public ought to be able to go down when they're thinking of buying a house, to go down and say, what's the exposure level? You know, show me what's in the area and make their own decision whether they want to be bound by the FCC criteria or not. Or maybe they don't want. Yeah. So it's kind of a separate issue.
So you're saying you would be favorable for a continuance with the direction that if they come back with the condition that if we put a condition with a finer gradient on the data, because this was, you know, not very clear, to say the least, we're tending towards an approval with a conditional use, with a condition on the, without any other architectural changes to the building.
Well, with or without, you know, I mean,
okay.
I think what we're saying is that some form of a condition saying that they would be required to modify the emissions based on future development on the adjacent property is a compromise.
Right, but I'd like to be certain in the wording of the condition. We wouldn't put an additional burden on the owner at that time to prove anything else. I mean, all it would require is that it exceeds 100%, so that you avoid some sort of a scenario where where AT&T says, "Well, fine, it's 101%, but that's still safe." So it would simply be just an objective finding. It's above the FCC findings. End of story.
The actual condition and the actual wording we would do at the next, you know, when this comes back to us.
Yeah. So that, I mean, for not to put too fine a point on it, but I wouldn't want the company to say, well, fine, sue me.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a very valid point. As I said, I this is an idea that I had. I don't know if AT&T would even be okay with it. So
right.
I'm hoping that they would, because I think this is a good compromise. But to touch on your concern, I think that they would be valid to have, you know, 100% or even, you know, at current FCC maximum exposure for general population, because who knows, the levels may go up, may go down, depending on how the science continues to evolve and so on and so forth. So don't want to necessarily tie this approval to a level that may become obsolete in the future. So,
well, I don't know that we can. Yeah, I don't know that we can. What if the levels go down? What if the permissible levels go down?
Well, he just said that this was a, you know, that would still behoove AT&T and on all their sites to reevaluate all their sites, you know, in a present condition, just because it's existing out there. If you're, you know, if you're spraying arsenic out, you know, on fields or something, and the levels go down, you have to stop spraying the arsenic to the new level. So it's basically the same thing. So they, as a corporate entity, they would want to stay within the acceptable, you know,
we can range, we can find wording. It could be, you know, the you know, it could be something like the applicable limits at the time or the current limits, whichever is lesser, right. Something like that. Something like those.
The one thing that scares me about this is we're going to be getting more of these that are hanging on the sides of buildings instead of trying to get them above, that are going to be directional and micro-sited to take advantage of front yard setbacks and small pieces of the cityscape. They're going to allow this ability to focus service. And I think the clarity of saying the FCC limit at the property line is very clear. Everything else then becomes a recalculation constantly, and we're going to end up seeing a proliferation of these things farther down the buildings. And I'm very concerned about the sides of the structures being the new place to put these things. And again, to me, it's a slippery slope. When it was on water towers, when it was on a church steeple, and it just gets the grain of how close we can get these things. I think the best thing to do is have very clear criteria and say, put a bunch of them in real small doses there. And don't start putting them down the faces of the buildings and trying to disguise them. I think it's sort of like the fake trees. They're not really very good, and everybody sees that they aren't. And I think this exposure level, this discussion we're having is all about all of these fixes that have to occur down the line instead of fixing it now. And so I'm not for the condition that was described.
If I may, Commissioner Lucas, just describe what, in your mind, what do you think, what's your solution to that then?
Not having it. I'm on record against these things in any way possible. Okay. Because I think the logic is totally flawed, and I think Richard and I are the minority in this opinion. But as an architect, we've changed the composition of the corner of the building, taking away what in all of our documents says is a scale mechanism to relieve the bulk of that building. We're bulking it up to accommodate this alternative. And then, as I said, we looked at putting them on poles, we looked at putting them in all sorts of city structures, and this idea that we're starting to move from the roofscapes down the face of the buildings to get these sections of coverage, to me, this just proved that when we start doing that, we're putting exposure levels onto property owners that we hadn't seen here before. And the ability of you folks to come up with permutations to make money off of this is way ahead of our ability to deal with it as a community. And we're just leaping farther and farther down that slope. And the political pressure is going to eventually come up. When one of you folks goes near a school, it's going to explode. You know, it seems to be dancing around the commercial structures on the edges of the residential structures now. And the community has a certain core group here that sees this as a big issue, regardless of what the FCC says. And it shows up in real estate. You know, it shows up in people paying attention to the nature of the environment that's around them. And so aesthetically, I don't think this was a great solution, but it's acceptable because this is something, you know, the elevator tower that's there. I think the ludicrous thing that we're talking about here is we can't even find the justification for the elevator tower on a building that was built in this century. It wasn't the 1850, you know, elevator tower. It's something that was built in recent times. So I don't like the idea of these notifications and things being the way that we safeguard the people. We know we have a technology here. It's got a limit that that's demonstrated as extending past the face of the building, and I think that's a dangerous precedent to start allowing this type of location. You know, it's totally different when it was, you know, five or six on the power towers on the edge of town. You know, we've got locations up there. But I think as these things start infiltrating the community, and we will see more. We'll see a lot more than the ones you're proposing here. And I don't know how many of them come before us. I think some of the ones that are in there, I'm not sure if they're administrative ones or if they all have to come before us. But, you know, that legislation isn't in place. And I just think seeing the idea that we would, it's really hard for me not to understand how you can't find a way to put smaller contraptions on the roof to do similar things with maybe an extremely modest one on the side of the building to cover the shadow that the other ones are creating. You've got an elevator shaft back there that doesn't have any facing the east. If you put some contraptions on there facing the east and then you used a much smaller one to cover the shadow, it would probably be, these numbers would come out radically different, I would think. But I don't know. That's not my area of expertise. My area of expertise is saying that building looks better with that slant on it now than it's going to be when you cover it up and make that building seem larger. That's an architectural thing. You know, my area of expertise and the ones we're more comfortable with is when Whitney shows us your first design, that we're uncomfortable with that height on a roofscape in a community built with around view sheds. So I'm just saying that I think there's other technical solutions, and I'm very uncomfortable with starting to put to allow the infiltration of these in such a way that 100% is going past the property lines. When the owner wants to do whatever is necessary to protect whoever's in the top floor of that building from what's above them, to protect the workers that are going to be re-roofing or cleaning the face of the building, I think that's fine. That's up to them. That's within their purview. But I just don't think it's right to start, you know, just saying because that person has a one-story building, we're going to all of a sudden put this 100% zone above there and pretend that I don't think that's right. And this is where those kinds of values come in. I'm not going to dispute the FCC's 100% or 5%, even though I think those are probably much higher than I would expose anybody in my family to. I'm not going to impose that because it's against what we understand from going through our lawyers and everything else with previous applicants on this trail. We get that part. But the problem is we're really pushing the envelope of how to read those texts. And as I said, if I was that property owner, I would have been in here saying my property rights are violated by there being a document that says that level of exposure extends into the part of my property that I can build on. And I don't think that's right because it's more than just, let's wait till, the solution we're talking about is let's just wait till somebody builds there, then we'll change it. And I just can't go along with that.
Yeah, the site is existing. I mean, you agree to that, right? I mean, it's existing. Whether or not it may have been approved, whether or not that design would have been approved had it come before Planning Commission today or not, I mean, we have to work with what we have. And
you're there with what's ever there. I'm talking about what you're adding on. You know, with your new antennas and things.
Okay.
Well, I think the answer here is that the commission is very divided on that as a condition, and so that's probably not where would be the best place to hang your hat, you know, because it right now it seems kind of like 3-2 towards accepting it, but we have some very passionate members who could certainly swing it the other way. So if I were you, I'd look at getting rid of that 100% contour across the property line rather than counting on that being a condition of approval.
Okay, so let's just take this to, you know, another hypothetical conclusion. What's to stop a property owner from requesting a zone, you know, a zone change from there that allows an even higher height.
I think you ask us for some guidance in terms of revising the project.
Right, and the purpose of that is to see if this is going to be enough. The last thing I'd want to do is to go back and tell my client that we've requested a continuance, and you know, here's what we need to come back with, so that the commission can make an informed decision. But if I just want to make sure that I'm not getting the sense, or I'm not interpreting this direction as a general sense of like, no matter what I bring back, it's not going to be enough, and there's, you know, I just don't want to be spinning my wheels for, you know, potentially months on end and then not go anywhere, and it's still,
right,
you know, lead to denial or further continuance or what.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure, because I could already see, you know, two firmly against wireless telecommunications.
You know. I don't know. I'm sorry. Let me stop you right there. I don't think that's the issue here at all. I think the issue here is exposure of adjacent property to EMF levels that are greater than 100% of the FCC maximum. That's all. And I think that the surest way to gain approval of the project is to eliminate that factor. I mean, the question was then, could we do it sort of conditionally? We'll eliminate it in the future if there's building. There you see a divide, okay? Mm-hmm. There you definitely see the commission is divided. But I think what we're all saying is that we're not against, I don't think any of us are against this proposal, except to the extent that it exposes adjacent property and potentially people, because of what the zoning is on that property and what the height limits are on that property, to levels in excess of what the FCC allows. I think that's the major issue. And the second issue is simply to have the additional information of the larger maps,
okay,
for people who want that information to make whatever decisions they want to make. You know, maybe they want to be in the higher energy spectrum because they'll get better cell phone reception. Who knows? But I think those are the two major issues. And then all of the subsequent discussion has been on whether this sort of conditional approach would work. And I think what you hear from the commission is that's probably a much less certain way to proceed, because the commission is split on that.
Okay. So on a finer grain of detail in terms of the report, kind of going back to what the report should show, would the commission be all right? Because to have that finer grain of in a three-dimensional space, coming back at ground and at 10-foot intervals and at ultimate roof level of what the development envelope would be, and showing the contours extending out. I'm trying to get it. I'm trying to picture mm-hmm. it in my mind. So our report preparer knows what they need to do to meet. The last thing I want to do is to prepare something and then it'd be like, well, it's still not good enough in terms of showing what's being presented. So at 10-foot increments, that would capture ground level, that would capture each building floor, and then having a roof level of what at the maximum development envelope would be. And then we could show the contours going out. We could tighten up these the scales. Instead of being, 500% intervals, and so on and so forth, tighten those up, right?
Yeah. Well, obviously, what's the building height limitation? 25 feet on that adjacent property?
It's 25 feet because it has residential development around it. Otherwise, in the C1 zone, it would be 30 feet.
Okay, so Okay, so obviously the maximum maximum exposure level is going to be the height of the antennas, right? At the height that the antennas are installed.
Right. The maximum level exposure would be at the height of where the antennas are installed. But the if I'm understanding what the commission is concerned about is what are the levels going to be at the property line and extending into the property. But at different heights of what can be developed there.
Yeah.
Right.
The maximum level at any given distance distance from the wall of the right. Twin Dolphin is going to be level with the antenna. Correct.
Correct.
So the antenna is 25 feet.
The antenna is. It's 22 on the.
I thought it was 19 feet to the base of the antenna.
Yeah, 19 feet to
like
the base.
22 to the middle of the antenna.
Foot 4 to the middle of the antenna, or 22 foot 0, yeah, 22 foot even.
Okay, and the potential development on the adjacent property includes 22 feet 0, right? It's up to 30 feet potentially, 25 feet now. Okay, so what we need to see is a proposal where the intensity level at 22 feet of height at the setback line, because we agreed that we would exclude we would deal with developable or buildable area rather than the entire lot. I think we need to see a proposal where that quantity is less than 100% of the FCC standards, because everywhere else it's going to be lower. Please. Guys, correct me if I'm saying something that's crazy here, but it seems logical.
Okay.
So that's what we need to see.
Okay.
At the height of the antenna, at the building setback line on the adjacent property, less than 100% of FCC.
Okay.
In each frequency range.
In each frequency, the band.
Each frequency band.
Is that going to be, is that?
So just one level?
Yeah, one level. One level at 22.
At the antenna height.
At the antenna height.
So at the setback line on the adjacent property. Because the antenna height is within the buildable envelope on the adjacent property.
Expanding figure 7, where you need to plot the property line and the setback line. And then this needs to be. This 105%, you need to bring this down. You need to have this. You know, don't even bother modeling. Don't even bother showing this on here. I understand that, but you're going to have to do something to change that, because this is absolutely useless. You're going to need to, you know, have a finer grade. You know, this is like 0 to 5, 0, 5 to 10, 10 to 20. You know,
that's going to be.
You're not necessarily remodeling everything. The model runs everything,
actually,
right?
Because it's not going to give us more than 4 levels. 0 to 100, 100 to 500 is the max. So I just can change the 5,000 to something else, to some other number.
Well, but do you have...
Okay.
You want to color-code it, and then you want each one of these is like 9 simulations.
Okay, so, but... It's only for one. And my apologies. So it's for each frequency band on here. So it's showing. It's just a table would work, right? You don't necessarily. I mean, a table showing the maximum. The maximum power levels at that point. For each frequency band
would work for that issue. Yeah, but we still want to see the distribution in the wider neighborhood for total power.
For total power.
Right.
But the your specifically your concern of each frequency band, and that's referring to figure 7.2 on page 17.
Right. In other words, here's this. It's pretty. Guys, here's the standards. Okay, this is what the FCC sees as the standard. So you have to say this is the standard. This is our projection. See, it's less than the standard. That's what we need to see.
Okay.
So exactly that, like this one.
They need to see
coming
it
coming from the same part of.
They need to see it in a. They need to see it in a table.
But you don't give us any maximum there. You know, for the composite that you're talking about.
Gives you the instead of megawatt over centimeters square, it gives you percentage MP percentage. This is the same thing as you see in section 7.5.
I'm sorry, you need to use the microphone.
As you see in section 7.5, this gives you the exactly same number, but in MP percentage that FCC wants. So these are all the calculations to get to that point. And that point you see in the figure, like any figure you want, figure 2.
No, but their concern is not at the antennas. It's at the property line.
So for each spot, you see
these
squares.
Line.
Yeah, these green squares, these are 10 feet by 10 feet, right? And what the roof view, the simulation software that works, it does it 1 feet, 1 foot by 1 foot. So it does simulate one dot by one dot. If you want any dot here, that would be simulation. Like it would be.
Would you be? Well, we could talk about we could talk about this offline, and then advise staff if that's. I'm sorry. We could talk about that offline.
I'd be happy to meet with you and staff and kind of go through it exactly.
Because I understand what you want. Since I don't work with these modeling tools, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I don't know what the limitations are. I don't know if it's just a model, different modeling package or what. But I think I understand what you want, and so I just need to find a path towards getting what you want.
This is, again, I'm working with what we've got here, you know, but what we need to see is we need for you to give us, this is the FCC standards. Here are the maximum numbers that the FCC will allow. Here are the numbers that our antennas will produce. See, our numbers are lower than the FCC numbers, and this doesn't do that.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of pretty colored graphs and stuff, but it does not make that demonstration.
In a table, not on the graph. And if the graph, we can talk about it after the hearing.
Okay, so I'm going to bring it back to the commission. We can certainly meet to work out some of these issues if you like.
Okay, so just before it closes, just to recap, it's just a better EME report at this point. And then if it still shows 100% going into the developable space, then an alternate design that would resolve that issue.
Right. And if you would like us, because then we start, once we do the alternate design, we start to get into some discretionary, you know, places where we have discretion rather than simply being bound by the FCC. And if you would like to consult with this group on that design when you have some possibilities, please feel free to do that on an informal discussion item basis.
Okay. Thank you.
So we have a motion and a second. Further discussion.
I think what I'm going to glean from this too is it would be nice to have an emissions map that shows this site, that for this site that would be in a graphic display.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that then it could be then combined to put on a layer of the GIS system that could then be shown at any other site that comes forward, that we would have that same graphic display. So at that point, those, you know, graphically, you could actually see the interaction of multiple sites from multiple locations. So any of the overlap would be that are in the same bandwidth would then show elevated emissions at certain points from combined locations. That's that holistic approach that I think Commissioner Lucas and Sadowski are trying to get to. So this could be the first step towards to do that, and this could be the first standard for that.
Well, the calculations of that are probably not simple.
No, but we wouldn't be actually doing the absolute calculations. It would be a graphic representation of what each one of these does for this report, shown graphically on the GIS system on the mapping system that the county has.
But at the very least, it would be information for the public.
It would be,
you could go in and say, okay, there's a cell site a block away. Is my property impacted by that? Is it not? Is it, you know, that's all.
No, I'm saying that this would be a positive thing.
Yeah. Maybe we need to at some point, I mean, we've got some of these reports from ones that we've had. Maybe at some point we should talk about making a file folder or a computer file with the graphics in it. I know. Okay, I'm an old fart. We have a motion on the table. Further discussion? Could we call for a question, please? Call for a roll call.
Commissioner Lucas.
Aye.
Commissioner Ingraffia.
Aye.
Commissioner Sadowski.
Aye.
Commissioner Luhr.
Aye.
Chairman Tapp.
Aye.
Motion for continuance passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay. We have no new business and we have no unfinished business tonight, so it's time for Planning Commissioner comments. Future agenda items? Okay. I know we've been talking for a long time, guys, but I have a comment that I have to make. You know, it struck me that we requested and staff brought forward at our last meeting a discussion of the possible boat haul-out facility and that sort of thing. And then about a week after that, I went to a demonstration with the landscape architecture class at Cal Poly where they looked at sort of the same area but included on up the stairway here and up into this area, and you know, it occurred to me that, and then about a week after that, I went to the visioning workshop for the downtown waterfront connection. Okay, and in both of those cases, it occurs to me that we're really making a huge mistake by concentrating on these narrow areas rather than broadening the scope. You know, when I went to the Cal Poly thing, they number one, they were incredibly creative, okay? And basically they were looking at joining this area together with that area down there and the Maritime Museum and then having the boat slips all sort of integrated into each other. And I think as we move forward to look at these projects, you know, when we went to the downtown waterfront, it occurred to me that, you know, here we have what used to be the Brannigan's Reef, now the D'Estacio's property, and we have the parking lot in front of that, and we have the parking lot next to Sun and Bunce, and we have Front Street, and we have the Centennial Stairway going down to the... Why aren't we looking at these as an integrated whole rather than one little piece at a time? And... You know, I would like to propose, perhaps as a future discussion topic here, that we look at this and maybe make some recommendations to the council in terms of looking at these areas more in a more combined way rather than separately. Because I think Right now, simply because of what's vacant and what's developed and what's available on the market and what the city owns, it's an incredible opportunity to develop some of these areas in a way that would really really be amazing.
I was at that Cal Poly symposium, and thank you again, Scott, for the invite. And I am always super blessed when I talk to the young people and the excitement and the creative solutions they come up with. And I agree with you, the holistic approach to this, and not a little myopic little, you know, kind of like what we're doing with this, you know, we need to look at the whole picture, you know, and really a comprehensive look at, like, the waterfront. I mean, Morro Bay, we have Coast Guard, we're a safe harbor. I mean, there, you know, we have the Rock of Gibraltar, the Pacific right there. You know, we're pretty special, you know, and we should take advantage of. I loved some of the ideas that they came up with. And, you know, even looking at this Fed's Hall and using, they called it a $10 million view, you know, and taking advantage of that. And the city, it has so much potential in that.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when we start to talk about in the general plan the possibility of specific plans, you know, as soon as you demarcate an area, you're talking about having some kind of concept about the way things work. So, you know, the northern waterfront, the Embarcadero, I mean, all these things have identities that are kind of fluid right now. But when we look at the general plan, as soon as we start talking about a district or a neighborhood, we've immediately said there's a thing there that we want to have some kind of clarity about, maybe having very specific ideas, but it has to work within the larger concept. You know, when we talk about traffic and tourism, and it's just amazing the potential we have here right now. That's a concern that anybody who's a designer or a planner, we still have plenty of time to take you into the city and regional planning. But I think that's always the issue, is where do you start, where do you stop? And, you know, that's what attracted all of us here, is this place is just incredible possibilities. So I don't know what that means. But
well, when we were looking at the Centennial Staircase, or the Centennial Staircase area specifically, it was just so clear that if that were integrated with the D'Estasio's property, that you could do something that was so much more amazing than just building a staircase. You know, that the idea of public, private, indoor, outdoor sort of space just became possible all of a sudden.
Well, yeah, this goes all the way back, and previously, but all the way back through the RUDAT program. And you know, there's still some great ideas in that format, in that formula. But, you know, the reason I'm sitting up here is this is really what I would be loved to have the commission to actually get in and start looking on that, even if we have to come in on a different day. Try not to take any more staff's time, but if there's any way that we could formulate some overall guidance for some of these other groups to go forward prior to the general plan update. Because I think the general plan update actually needs a little more guidance to even get started. But having this input to help shape those areas for, you know, is I think that's kind of why we're all here. So,
is that something?
So the Embarcadero widening and Centennial Stair project is about halfway through its process right now. It is absolutely connected to the general plan, local coastal program update. In fact, consultants are sharing information as it relates to that. We are getting ready as an offshoot of the general plan, local coastal plan update, to really get going on the downtown waterfront strategic planning process, which is going to pick up the property that you're talking about and take that forward in the manner that you're talking about. It's actually one of the things I'm reviewing in the contract right now. So that is something that's coming together, and you know, so general plan LCP update is being done by Michael Baker International. Downtown waterfront strategic plan also being done by Michael Baker. It's an offshoot and an additional task that we wrote into the contract, or I am writing into the contract right now. The contract's not finished, and we have authorization from council for that and funding for that, and so that's picking up and looking at those two things and trying to get the better connection, including a branding component between downtown and the waterfront. Because right now, as you're all well aware, you know, the downtown, that's kind of citizen serving. Waterfront, Barcadero, that's kind of visitor serving, and kind of never the two shall meet. And so we're trying to get rid of the never the two shall meet and say, hey, this is how it's connected and how we're driving those things together. So we are looking at that, and those two planning efforts are combined. And they're picking up. So originally the Centennial Stair project and Embarcadero Widening project were a public works project that they were going to go put a plan together for. Here you go. And we said, well, that probably needs, you know, a full vetting. And so it turned into a separate objective of the city council's goals process for fiscal year 15-16, which we're rapidly running out of. Sort of continues on. That effort will continue on at least for a couple of more months while they finalize, you know, the work products from the workshop that we had about 3 weeks ago.
Hey, Scott, is there, you know, I unfortunately was working at the time and wasn't able to get to the workshop. Is there any way that we can contribute in the earlier stages in the scoping meetings as a commission that we could help the process go along rather than have a presented plan presented to us that then we have limited options to go yay or nay?
Well, I mean, we had the workshop that was on it, so you certainly could have participated in that. Probably going to have a second one once they put some work products together for that, so you can take a look at that. And I'm talking about the Barcanero Widening Centennial Stair piece. We're also going to have a joint planning commission and city council meeting to go over assumptions that are coming out of the general plan baseline assessment. Should be interesting for you. The baseline assessment is, at this point, 600 pages long. So the General Plan Advisory Committee will be getting that in a couple of weeks. Right now it's vetting through staff. Make sure we don't have any major miscues before we give it to the GPAC. And really, at that point, that's when we're releasing it to the public. Here you go, take a look. And so we're kind of going through the sort of administrative draft of that right now. So you get the opportunity to weigh in with council on the assumptions that result from that and to look at that baseline data information. It includes the entire baseline information for the entirety of the general plan update. So it's all pieces, and the good thing is we have it all in one document, and then we have it in bite-sized pieces that kind of support the individual elements, because, you know, to open it up and look at it at 600 pages is a bit much. So you get to provide input as much as you want, either online at that planning commission, joint planning commission, city council meeting, or offline individually to me. And we're probably going to have more, interactions with the consultant and the planning commission moving forward, looking at some of the data that the general plan advisory committee is coming up with as well. So this is ongoing, and it's not going to stop anytime soon. It's going to be a lot of information for you to review. We were warning the general plan advisory committee about this. Dr. Teff knows, and I don't think any of them have had any idea about how much information we were going to give them. We tried to give them a picture of it. I've talked to a couple of the general plan advisory committee members kind of offline and said, hey, it's coming, and we just got it, and it's 600 and something pages long. There's another component of that that's the resiliency analysis and sort of response to some of the stuff that's in there related to climate adaptation, those types of things, and that's another chunk of it that's several hundred pages as well that we have. We just got to. I haven't had a chance to look at that yet. So,
I guess I think I echo your sentiments. Though, is there some way that the Planning Commission can sort of be in there somewhere between
public workshops and here's the plan kind of thing. Is there a way that we can see things when it's not on paper, when it's still fluid, when it's still conceptual, before it gets down to, you know, sort of specific things?
It kind of depends, because some of this is, you know, based on, well, not some of it, most of it is based on public outreach. You know, a lot of the information that we're getting in to develop sort of, so what you're here for to review, you know, when it comes to like the general plan stuff is policy level stuff. We're going to give you the information that leads into that policy is to make sure we're going in the right direction with it, which is why you're going to be reviewing the assumptions. That's important because we don't want to go and start developing policies off assumptions that are wrong or are maybe headed in the wrong direction anyway, because then we're going to be wasting a lot of time. That's very important stuff, and that's where it's key that you engage. Prior to that, I mean, right now we're just developing the baseline information that's provided by many of the sub-consultants that are part of the team. When it comes to the information related to the Embarcadero Widening Project, Centennial Stair Project, the next phase of this you will get to see. I haven't gotten the work product and the sort of condensing of the information that came out of that workshop. We haven't received that back yet from RRM. That is probably something that you will be taking a look at, though, and that'll be the preliminary plan. Like, hey, this is, you know, a couple of the options that were the predominant themes of that meeting. Take a look at it. Let's get your input. Roll that back into the more finalized plan, and then that gets rolled out into a second workshop. So,
I think that's exactly where we'd like to be involved. Here's where the public input left us. Here's where we think it's taking us. What do you guys think about that?
That's what we want. And then that gets rolled into the sort of the final product that we roll back out at another workshop, and then off work. Then hopefully we get a finalized plan that runs back through Planning Commission and City Council for adoption. So that's kind of how that all works.
Perfect. We're
doing that a lot. It's perfect. Actually, lining these things up is great. We get the calendars out and trying to get everybody available. Herding cats does not do that justice. Anyway.
Any other commissioner comments? Community development manager comments.
Well, the only thing I did have to announce that I just mentioned as part of that was the joint meeting for the Planning Commission and City Council on August 9th. That's prior to the City Council meeting starting, so that's going to be 4 to 5:30-ish or however long you ask questions for up until right before 6.
Right.
So, yeah. And so we'll try to give you that information well ahead of time so you have... probably send out, once we make the information for the baseline information available to the General Plan Advisory Committee and I put that online, or at least a link to it, I will also give it to all of you. So you can start looking at it ahead of time. I think it'll be pretty interesting, and like I said, you have the ability to look at it all at once or take it one bite at a time. So, yeah.
Very good. And with that, we will adjourn to the next regular Planning Commission meeting here at the Vets Hall on July 5th, 6 p.m. Thank you.